Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights of the round table, our shows are more, we're able. So many times we give and blind to our quiet unseen label. We're off the bad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
hear... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away!
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
He, King Shaziz the Terrible. All rise for King Shaziz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look.
disease the turbo. Always working in disease the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
Woohoo! I hope you liked that last tune there. I guess it's called Corruption, an original song by some YouTuber out there. So if you like that song, I posted a link to the video in there in the chat room. But it's called Corruption, and that's pretty much what we're talking about. So I figured that would be some really good theme music to bring us into the subject of corruption. So I've been honored and joined by Honorable Knight Two Dog. Say hi, Two Dog.
Oh, hello, everyone. It's a good, wet, rainy day here, and I'm very happy to be with you, Suzette.
Yeah, it's not rainy where I'm at. It's frozy where I'm at. Yeah, it's cold out there. It's corrupt outside, man.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, what is the definition of corruption? Before I go into that, let's say hi to People for People Radio and TCT Radio and all the other affiliated networks out there. List is getting too long to keep on repeating, just like I try to do that once in a while, but I can't remember half the time. Anyway, thanks, everybody. Appreciate everything. I see Barbara just showed up in the chat room. We're going to have to throw her in the call here before too long. Alright, so corruption. Corruption is a form of dishonest or unethical conduct by a person entrusted with positions of authority, often to acquire personal benefit. It ain't like we ain't seen none of that going on. What do you think, Two Dog? You think you've seen any corruption?
Well, truthfully, I've seen it through this whole administration, but I've seen the you know, as far as corruption goes, you know, ever since John Kennedy, actually, man, corruption has been going for decades in this country.
Yeah, well,
around the world.
I've actually seen corruption from the lowest levels to the highest level in my lifetime, and it's just, you know, when you entrust somebody with something, you know, you're a leader of your community, and you know that's a big honor to be entrusted with, helping to take care of your community and such like that. And when people take advantage of it for personal gain, or, you know, manipulate the masses with lies and propaganda for the same purpose, I guess, probably even agenda, you know, supposedly there's this this battle going on in the between the government entities and the people who, the money men behind the strings, the puppet masters and such like that. Supposedly there's this deep state battle going on, you know, for, power and control. And at this stage in the game, I don't know who's the good guy or who's the bad guy outside the fact is sitting back and watching and see who goes to jail and who don't go to jail and who, all that kind of stuff. Because we as the average Joe, unfortunately, kind of dropped the ball when it came down to the government. Because, you know, we give these entities power to, basically make laws and, do things for the defense of the nation. And there's a lot of times when the average Joe wouldn't and doesn't agree with what's actually going on, you know, under the name of our government, you know, under the name of the people or whatever.
Well, you know, should this, when you... When you're part of the government, you go to, like, the UN, right? And you say that you're a spokesman for the American people, and that if you don't do what I want you to do, and we may call war upon you for the American people, where they don't talk for me.
No, they don't talk for me either. They don't talk for me either, because I don't subscribe to war. Now, the only time I would ever see any kind of justification for war is if, you know, you were, like, you know, physically attacked by another nation or whatever, and you had no alternative but to defend yourself. See, that's the only justification I can see for war. But the way that it's been portrayed out, and even, you know, going into the conspiratorial world of this deal, you could look back at 9/11, and there's a lot of questions that were going on at the time, that if this was, you know, corruption of the highest level, and even to the point of treason, to quite literally murder people to get us into another war, you know, there's a serious problem right there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because if you think about it, just think about how many people that have, they said, committed suicide falling out of a two-story building on a bunch of bullets, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, there were investigations that were going on during that time that, you know, the people in the alternative media talk about, but the mainstream media never even remotely mentioned, such as the fact that there was an investigation going on in the Pentagon at the time, supposedly, that they were trying to find a couple million or trillion dollars that had just vanished, you know, from the budget and such. And it just ironically, the exact spot where the investigation was going on in that particular section of the building is one that supposedly got hit by a plane, regardless of the fact that, you know, you can't see no wing marks or any pieces of the plane laying around anywhere in the lawn. You know, regardless of all that, the exact same spot where the information was being, you know, investigated, in the Pentagon was destroyed, and building number 7, which wasn't even hit by a plane, had some things going on in there with, you know, computers and evidence and stuff like that, and for some reason it, you know, went down as well. And
what I understand about the Pentagon, there was a woman that actually worked in there that, you know, when they said the plane hit the Pentagon, she actually was not too far from the blast when she actually said it was a missile with the United States emblem on it. I'm not saying, you know, but that's what she said.
Well, it doesn't matter one way or another. Well, it does matter, but what I'm trying to say is that the government, the way that it's set up these days and the way that the mainstream media lies so doggone often, they make themselves look guilty regardless of whether they're guilty or not. They feed the fires of
that's very good.
Jump in. Morning.
Yeah.
I'm just going to jump in here. You know that there is serious corruption. When the ones who are corrupted are investigating themselves.
Well, yeah.
You know, and when they set up, what do they call it? We're going to set up a special...
Council.
Council.
Yeah.
And we're going to investigate those perpetrators. You know, they set it up with the ones who should be ousted, but they're the ones that are taking the position. Say, yeah, we're going to set up a special council to investigate this. And the investigation goes, how many investigations have there been over the centuries and the years of the corruption and of this and that? And then they throw something else at you. Well, then that last thing that everybody was all up about, and, well, let's get the investigation going, and what are the findings, and come on, this looks obvious to us, and then the next thing rolls along, you know, the next bulldozer comes along. Yeah, you know, it's like the thing with, you see these people do really seriously. No, I'm not talking about the government. I'm not talking about these councils. I'm talking about your average people. Do really deep research, you know. They have like, I don't know, you want to call them patriots, you want to call them wackadoodles, you want to call them conspiracy nutcases, whatever you want to call them, there are people out there who really get into deep, deep research for years to prove, you know, the wrongs that were done and the lies. And you know, you can go all over on YouTube or papers and find this information that now is coming out about, well, I don't know, the World War II, you know, Vietnam War.
Yeah.
All the corruptions, the lies. You can go back and you can find all the information by real people who are doing real investigations, even the UFO investigations. You know, I mean, you can just go back and do that research, but what I'm talking about is the real people. You know, and brilliant people. Well, and good people.
I get what you're saying, and also the fact that, you know, they are scrutinizing video that the mainstream put up and that the government put up and documents that the government put up and the mainstream put up, articles and such. They scrutinize this. They put two and two together, and they put their findings out there. And so it's like really brilliant research that gets called tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy. But it's their information it's that they right put out.
It's right in front of everybody. You know, like the movie, the filming of the Pentagon. What you were just talking about. Hi, Two Dog. By the way. What's the yo? I started right in because I was like jumping on you. it's raining here too by us, but icy. So the Pentagon thing, you know, apparently they just, of course they kept everybody back and then they scarfed up all the whatevers that was around there. There were no plane parts. I mean, you're talking about a huge plane, you know, and there were people there that, you know, happened to then, I guess, you know, say these things. Of course they were the weirdos and the reports, and now you can see films on this whole, that whole day. And then there is this interesting thing. Was it Cheney who, I don't know, an underling came running in and kept asking him, okay, is this the time now? Something along, I'm paraphrasing, is this the time? Is now? Should we do this? And he was asking, and Cheney kept saying, no, not yet. No, not yet. No, not yet. I mean, kind of weird things, you know. And then our own Air Force wasn't scrambled, called on. That's what it was. I think that's something to relate in relation to that, what he was saying, no, not yet, or something along those lines. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff, excuse me, that you have to really look at that people are now focusing on and seeing this whole thing on that day. And the plane that was, do you remember the plane that went down in some backwoods area, that was that day too, that was...
Yeah, trench, somebody had used Google Earth to show that the trench was there before the plane crash, and even during the time it just looked like somebody lit a fire in the deal, you know, and there wasn't no plane parts or luggage or seats or bodies out there.
But here you go, you know, it's like you're given a show, it's a movie, you know.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get to next was, you guys have used this word a lot about everything being a distraction, and yesterday on the Mad Science Show, we talked about this, this fake star man, and... You know, as I'm watching this thing, supposedly a live stream, and I watched a rebroadcast of the live stream, and the more I watch it, the more anomalies I find, and the more fake it looks. I mean, for example, depending on when you click on this thing, you'll get a different time stamp, but right now it's kind of sitting at -1946 on there. And if you watch this, you'll see like a little object float underneath the deal, and then you'll see this this covering that's on the back by the engine. Literally, it looks like somebody put air in a bag, and then suddenly, you know, a change in pressure pushed it in real quick, right? Well, of course, you're in a vacuum of space, and I'm just not understanding how that could even occur, you know, out there in space like that. But it's not one of many anomalies that's on there. And the other deal that struck me funny was the fact that if you look up on in the sky at any given day, 9 times out of 10, you'll see a checker pattern up there where they had sprayed chemtrails in the sky. Now, one would have to think that if you're looking down at the Earth from that camera view, you should be seeing lines all over the sky. You know, and that would tell me, okay, well, they're at least up that high, you know, they can see them spray lines that they put out there. And so there's a lot of things that tell me that this is a hock, a hooey, if you know what I mean. And so, you know, the corruption doesn't just start and end in the governments and things like that. It's also in the corporations that, you know, the insiders to media and stuff like that, because there's a lot of money involved in this deal. You know, people, most people just look past this deal. They know that Elon Musk is a rich man, okay? So he's paying for the bill. But that's not the whole case, because he actually gets subsidies from the government, which comes from taxpayer money.
Guess what? Oh, what I just found. There's somebody else on our page here.
Yeah?
This week, SpaceX shared stunning footage of Starman riding a Tesla Roadster on a journey beyond Mars. Incredible angles, often capturing Earth in the background, are possible due to strategic camera placement. The car is outfitted with three camera mounts. Pay attention. One at the driver's side, one at the front, and one behind Starman. Now, this is the jaw-dropping photos of Elon Musk's red Tesla Roadster soaring through space with a dummy behind the wheel have left viewers around the world stunned this week, with even SpaceX enthusiasts wondering how the eccentric boss could possibly have pulled this one off. While they might seem too good to be true and have inspired insinuations of fakery from skeptics on the internet, the explanation behind the incredible angles of Starman's journey is actually quite simple. So simple, in fact, that Musk himself has said you can tell it's real because it looks so fake.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Oh, well, there's other people talking about, is it fake?
Yeah, so there's money involved in this situation. So, you know, just about every state that I know of, a felony starts at $500 worth of theft, all right? And so we're talking thousands of dollars worth of theft. If you're fraudulently showing somebody and telling them this is a real deal and you're getting money from, you know, the government, that's a serious crime, all right? That's corruption, all right?
And You talk about corruption now. Okay, here's the question to live science. Why does the Tesla look so fake in space? And we asked a chemist. So the chemist is probably corrupt.
Yeah.
So it looks so ridiculous and impossible. He told reporters, the SpaceX CEO told reporters, you can tell, he said it again, but Musk went on to say that colors in general look strange in space because there's no atmospheric occlusion. Everything's too crisp, he said. But what did he mean by this? What does he mean by that? Do you know?
No, I have no idea. That's a new
because
one
of the
idea.
Atmospheric occlusion. Okay.
Well,
so
I
colors do look
can...
fuzzier on Earth. Let's see what this scientist is. He's basically making a. I popped it in the chat, but he's basically giving us an explanation. Okay, in his scientific jargon, right? To explain how this is real, okay? So you can read it for yourself. You get these incredibly good pictures when you're in space, he said. You know, and he goes on to talk about various excuses about why this is real, why it is not fake.
Well, I'm clicking on the link because I might want to scan over it while somebody's talking or whatever. But, look, first off, go back and look at the old video Heavy Metal, the movie. It's an animation, and that's, you know, going to give you a first red flag. And look how good the graphics were in that, where it literally shared the aspects of what this has got going on, where you can actually see things reflecting in the glass and on the car and stuff. And, you know, like I said yesterday, somebody's got some explaining to do, because on the ground there are videos, if you want to look hard enough for them, you can find where on really hot days people's cars have literally had the trim melt off of them and drip down to the ground at 100 degrees Celsius. I don't know what that is at Fahrenheit or whatever.
But, well, the flat earthers are right along with us.
Well, yeah. I don't doubt it.
Flat earthers are the ones who basically are saying that this rocket launch was faked by Elon Musk. These are the flat earthers. They insist on this.
Well, I want to know where the chemtrails are that we see on a regular basis as it's flying past that beautiful blue marble in space. Where are all those lines in the sky that we see from the ground? Because they'd have to be able to see it from up there. You know?
Well, we live in a hologram, so
yeah,
we live in an illusion, so you know.
Well, nothing would surprise me, but nonetheless, there's still a lot of explaining to do. And if this indeed is a fraud, then and corruption of the highest, because you're lying to millions of people, man. All right, and under the guise of this lie, you're collecting funds from the federal government and probably other governments of the world. And maybe even via donations or whatever for your cause. And if it's a big fakery from the get-go, I mean, if these people come right out and said, hey, we're gonna make you this really cool virtual deal, and, you know, of course you know it's not gonna be real, but it's gonna be cool, you know, I could understand that. But to come out and say, oh no, this is real, and stick to your guns, this is real, and then collect money, when the science, if you try to sit there and match the science up to what you're actually visually seeing, you know, it doesn't jive. Well, to me, that's fraud, especially knowing that you know, because you're the one to put the rocket in space, that supposedly, that you knew it well all along that it was fake. You see what I mean?
I want to ask Two Dog. So, here's the conspiracy. Here they start off with conspiracy theorists who believe the Earth is flat have branded Elon Musk's astonishing Falcon Heavy space mission as fake and nothing more than a good car ad. What do you think, Dudok?
Well, to be honest with you, I think it's I did see that, and to me it looks incredibly fake. But
right.
Well, how is it this car is protected from the UV rays and all the rays coming? I mean, we're talking about a direct beam from the sun. I mean, it don't have the solar shield like we got, or the chemtrails to block out the sunlight and stuff. It's right there in the direct of the fire, and then the windshield. When that windshield's facing directly at the sun, you should get the Fresnel lens effect. That should be, you know, things should be warping, and, you know, old Starman should be looking a little droopy by now.
I would say the windshield would have busted.
Yeah, from cold and heat, and expansion and contraction of rapid changes of extreme temperature differences. That paint should be peeling off. The dash panels should be melted up. And, I mean, think about it.
It's all fake. I think it is.
You mean, aren't you one of those TV watchers that claim I saw it on TV? It must be real. It's got to be real.
You know, here's what I think most of the time on the TV thing. It's not, a lot of it's not true, but, you know, there are situations where I have seen that the media is telling pretty much the right way, and then there, you know, there's one saying this is that, and the other saying that's this, and it's up to you to figure out the two. You know, that's how they do things.
Well, my thing about the whole deal is the information value and the trustworthy of the people putting that information out. I mentioned yesterday on the Mad Science Show about people, you know, discounting the Bible because it was written by man, but I'm sitting there saying, you know, if to be intellectually honest, then that would have to exclude every other book as well as being a valid source, even unless you went through each book and you read the content of it and then you went out and tested and verified it and, you know, started making this stack of books that, you know, we've tested everything on here. Here's our results and our information, so we're pretty sure that this one here is close to being right. You can't trust the information coming from anywhere these days. You see what I'm saying?
No, because here's the thing about a lot of people with the Bible right now is, and you have a lot of preachers that I've talked to that seem to contradict themselves. So when they start contradiction, you really get to the point you don't know.
Well, that's what... You know, that's why I don't sit here and say, hey, you know, this is the right book or the only book. Or, you know, I take everything that I read with a grain of salt. I think about, you know, the possibility of manipulation, and I look for the truth inside myself, you know, because I got a little truth meter like you guys do, and it goes off when something don't jive. And
I mean, I even had a preacher that I asked a question to. I said, if you had first man and first woman, and they had two sons, one son killed the other son, and he got married to who? He couldn't answer me.
Well, like I said to so many people about, you know, so many different subjects. You know, I wasn't around a couple thousand years ago, so I couldn't be classified as a witness to anything, and I haven't been far enough away from the earth to tell you whether it's round or flat, so I couldn't testify to that. I haven't been far enough across this planet to give you information about what's going on, where or when. All I got to disseminate from is, like everyone else, is information that's put on the table before me. And, you know, I got to find whether or not I feel I can trust the information that's presented. So, to me, it's all questionable. Every bit of information coming from any direction is questionable until I can physically test it. But, like, for example, what I was hollering about yesterday on the Mad Science Show, that, you know, this to me violates everything that the book said about science and physics and reality. And so this is why I think that this is my opinion. I don't believe that car is up there in space. And I believe that whoever put it up there, you know, if it was there, you know, then they did a credible thing. But if it isn't there, then they committed fraud on a lot of people by, you know, putting this false information out there. And so, well, I'm looking at everything with a critical eye, you know.
I look at things like this, you know, for higher learning or higher understanding, one has to ask questions of what he doesn't know to get that answer and to find that answer. So, yeah. Questioning is, or trying to just question to get an understanding, is a natural thing.
That's right, and that's why you need to get both sides of the story, put all the information in front of you, and use the best of your ability to discern the information, because what we got going on here, this is pretty incredible. If it's CGI, you know, it's pretty incredible job, but it still has flaws, and so that's why I'm questioning it. But even on the news, the mainstream news media, when you're seeing events unfold, you have to be discerning, because we have the capability right now to literally create virtual worlds where, you know, reality could quite literally be upside down, and real is fake and fake is real in that kind of situation. And the, like Barbara was mentioning about the scientist that was giving his explanation of why it looks the way that it does out there in space, you know, how would you know unless you've ever actually been out there visually seeing for yourself, hey, yeah, that looks a lot more crisp and, you know, there's no atmospheric distortion going on or refraction or anything. So, you know, I haven't seen this on the ground. You see what I'm saying?
You know. Yeah. Listen, remember recently how, if you did any research on this, about the global warming thing, how Exxon, I think, and I didn't go into it too much, but how Exxon was actually buying off some scientists, right, to fudge the, you know, all this information.
Yep.
Manipulate all the information about there's no global warming. Well, there isn't any global warming, but there are issues that they're not identifying with this whole global warming scare thing. You know, I mean, let's talk about what's really happening. But meanwhile, there's different scientists saying different things. You know, some of them are claiming that we're in trouble and this is happening, and others are saying there's no such thing, everything's fine. And those are getting bought off by big corporations, and people are carrying on and screaming about global warming, that we're to blame with the, was it the CO2, the carbon footprint, and all that stuff. they're going in the wrong direction because, you know, we are in trouble because you have corporations clear-cutting forests. You have the drilling in the everywhere you can imagine and oil spills. You have chemtrails, you know, landing on us. You have pesticides. You have big pharma. You have GMOs. That's where we're in trouble, folks, not the fake global warming thing.
Well, there's one other thing to add to that. What you're saying about that is because right now Elon Musk, in case people don't know it, is making electric cars, all right? And so he gets these tax credits for carbon credits, and he is able to turn around and sell them to, like, General Motors or different major companies. If they can't meet their emissions standards, they can buy these credits from him, which gives him more money. And so he's getting these credits for making these electric cars, and then he's turning around and in turn, on one hand, he's going green by helping the supposed electric car and carbon footprint, but on the other hand, basically making it easy for the other ones over there to not be able to by selling them these credits for a profit or whatever. You see what's wrong with this picture here?
Well, what do they call it when somebody is in control of a particular market?
Monopoly.
Monopoly. There you go. Yeah. A monopoly.
Yeah, and there's actually laws against having a monopoly. I think it was the RICO Act or something like that. I can't remember. Basically, you couldn't...
Was that Tony Rico?
Probably. I don't know, but...
Let me ask a question here on this. You know, you have a lot of things with the way America's going right now and other things of that manner. And the way I look at things is, America is a nation of laws, not people. So is your law there when you die? Is it there when you have your children?
Well,
people are, isn't it?
It seems to some extent.
We're all under the corruption of the system.
Yeah.
The whole system, you know. I mean, my thing is, here's what I feel about, you know, and I've said this before about, we live on Turtle Island, to all the listeners, by the way. This radio broadcast is coming from Turtle Island, the great Turtle Island here. And, you know, this country, as Trump is claiming, let's make it great again. And my response was, you know, this country was not great for a lot of people. And this country was founded on, well, corruption, we could say, manifest destiny, which gave them the right to come in here and bring slaves here, commit genocide, you know, and violence upon this Turtle Island and the millions of Indian people who lived here. They came here with the Bible under their arm, literally, they did, because they were coming looking for freedom of religion and a place to live and land, and they were told it's all free and take what you want. The people who live, well, they're not people, they're savages over here, they're not really human, you know. The same thing they did with the black people, you know. People of color,
yeah.
If you're not a Christian, and these are the words, really, that they were told, that if they're not Christians, you could basically just take them off the planet, you know, but that's what this country was founded on. So to make America great again, that's a big question for me, because, I mean, I'm not stupid to know that there is corruption in our government. It's been shown over and over and over again from the beginning. And it's not just here on Turtle Island, it's throughout the world, you know. There are those who just can't help themselves, you know. They're greedy, they're sold their soul to the devil, you know. They're money-hungry, greedy people, and they do things to other people that are shocking and stunning, and that this is what we're living under today, you know.
Yeah. I'd like to make another valid point about it. You know, slavery didn't end is like everybody thinks it did. It may have ended to some extent for one class, but it got extended to all classes and all races, because if you look at what's actually occurring in the world today, it doesn't matter what color you are. You're under the gun of the government, and even when you die, they're still going to be dipping into what would have otherwise been your children's inheritance from all your hard works that you had done throughout your life. they want a percentage of whatever you're going to give your kids even after you're gone.
Let me add to that a little bit, Shaziz. I can say it like this. I talked to many, many people, and I've even talked to many schools who absolutely had no understanding about this. And, you know, because America was the way America was, they used to hunt in California a certain nation, just like you would hunt a deer. And Ishi was the last of his tribe that actually died in 1934. And when I speak of the Yahi Nation, which doesn't exist anymore, nobody knows who that is. Nobody's ever even heard of it. And you talk about American history, but you don't know your history. So, you know, and to be honest, as far as the late Russell Means actually did state, you know, whether you live on Pine Ridge Reservation or Chicago, Illinois, welcome to the reservation. You're on it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And, you know,
well, I agree with you. I don't think slavery ever ended, and certainly we know prejudices against others have never ended. And
right.
I'm on a slavery in regards to women, for instance, because women, the European women, those of other countries who came here to Turtle Island, were virtual slaves in I call them pretty dresses, because women didn't have any rights at all. The white women had no rights at all. They could not vote, and this is all true. They couldn't get an education. They couldn't own property. They had virtually no say. They were just, you know, like I said, they were slaves. Slaves to the husbands or slaves to the men, slaves to the system. They were kept down under, you know, stepped on pretty much. Well, so we still have that going on, even though women have made some progress. There's still this mindset about women. Women are less than or not worthy of the better paycheck like men are. You know, it's still, this is an energy that is embedded in the culture, with the energy about prejudice of people of color is embedded in the culture.
Yep. There's a word, I think it's enable. You know, when you got a family member, somebody who's an alcoholic, and, you know, in order to keep them calm and comfortable, you will actually go out and purchase alcohol for them, even though you know that you want them to stop, and it's got to be their choice to stop, and, you know, you could, you know, cut them off completely, just not enable them to be able to drink, but they'll go out and find it somewhere else, and a lot of people's justification is, well, you know, they'll go out and find it somewhere else, and I'd rather them drink here than, you know, be out in public and get hurt or go to jail or whatever like that. But nonetheless, you're still perpetuating the situation where this person's is going to continue to be an alcoholic, continue to die, and continue to make terrible mistakes and so on down the line. And reason why I brought all that up was because essentially we the people who are the ultimate power, if we really ever decided to use the ultimate power, we have been enabling our government to quite literally run over our family, our brothers and sisters, all over the planet. I mean, it's not just here in the United States. You see what I mean?
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. Now, as far as, say, an alcoholic or an addict, let everybody understand that I am a, right now, I'd say 38-year sober alcoholic and a 38-year clean addict. And they tell you, you can't do it by yourself. Well, I did. I woke up one morning, looked in the mirror, and had tombstones in my eyes, and I knew I had to do something about it.
Yeah.
So I did it by myself. And boxes of Hershey bars and gallons of milk did do a job on me. It got me clean. But, you know, you can do it by yourself if you have faith enough and the power enough that you want to do it.
Yeah, I believe all the American people and even people around the world got tombstones in their eyes right now. And I think for the most part, the tombstones are blinding them to the reality that they got to, and they can, if they decide to, start holding these people accountable for their actions. You know, even the mainstream media, I was telling everybody back during all these doggone protests about everything, was that you're protesting the wrong people. You're out there protesting the guys and gals with guns and authority, perceived authority anyway, and you're getting beat up, you're getting pepper sprayed, you're getting imprisoned and thrown in jail and such. You should be over there protesting the source of the propaganda that got everybody out there to begin with, because the power is in the media is incredible when you think about what they're able to do and how they're able to manipulate public opinion just by what they're saying. And so they're able to basically cover up for corrupt politicians, corrupt law enforcement, you know. And once again, I want everybody to understand this. I am not anti-government. I'm anti-corruption, okay? That's the whole key here. And if these folks are basically, by their nature, mainstream media is enabling the government to continue to do the things that they do to the American people, and even in Hollywood for that matter, you know, glorifying things that we don't necessarily approve of. You know, the only ones who can do anything about this and to basically send a loud message to all those who would do harm to others is to not enable them to do what they do. Stop buying their movies. Stop sitting around watching their commercials and their news broadcasts. Stand on their front lawn, send them messages and say, look, as long as you're going to be lying to the people, you're not getting our business. That will get their attention, and it will get the politicians' attention as well, because the politicians look forward to the media basically covering their behinds, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
Here's the thing, and I'll let Barbara, you know, go with this also if she wants to. But, you know, I was actually voted in as leader of my nation without running. I didn't really know until I got a phone call that I got it. But, here's the thing that I'm gonna say. Most of the time, if you ever watch people, they're gullible. People are gullible. They like to hear these things. But these politicians smile at you and they talk to you and say what they're going to do for you, and then you vote for them into office, and they don't even know your name after that, and they do what they want to do.
Yeah. Well, there's
a constant thing. It never stops.
There's
a constant lie.
There's a mentality going on in Washington, D.C., which is actually the District of Columbia. It's not even actually part of the United States. It's its own entity with its own laws and law enforcement.
There you go.
And so people need to recognize that, you know, do some research into it. But nonetheless, you get a new politician, a senator or congressman goes into this business, so to speak, he's going to be contacted from the very first day he gets into Washington. He's going to be offered stuff, bribed. They're going to look for dirt on him. They're going to figure out any possible way that they can blackmail him or whatever to get him to vote their way. And there's where, you know, lobbyists and money and all that comes into play. And so one can see where this could go bad really fast. All right.
Well, where I'm from, if you think that Rand Paul or Mitch McConnell speaks for me, you're out of your mind, because they don't. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I speak for myself. They don't speak for me.
Well, there's been a lot of wars fought under all of our names, you know, and a lot of the wars that were fought under our names were basically based on a lie to begin with. It's just like a lot of the science out there that they're using to take money from the people based on bogus science, well, based on a lie.
Exactly, but here's the thing. You know, it's like the rock group System of a Down. Why did they start the war? And why did they always send the poor? It's just that. They started, your poor children died from all of it. They don't go.
Well, that's why I'm trying to tell the people out there, keep doing what you're doing with alternative media. Keep doing what you're doing with your researching, and keep putting it out there as long as you're allowed to put it out there. We're up against some censorship like you wouldn't believe. This is George Orwell's on crack, literally. I mean,
well, yeah.
But don't stop. I mean, print out information, share it with the people. If you have to hand it off, pass it off in a note, because what's actually on the line here. I believe it's actually beyond freedom. I believe that it actually goes into a spiritual battle of quite literally epic proportions or even biblical proportions.
It is a spiritual battle. It's every day a spiritual battle. I agree with you, Shaziz. But let's look at it this way. I live pretty close to a place they said actually had a massacre, and it was called Bowling Green, Kentucky Massacre. This was said, I think, sometime last year. People in Bowling Green are telling me where was the massacre, because they lived there. They didn't see one, but it was kind of a thing to get people to jump, Muslim people there.
Well, you know, there's a whole lot of different things that are really questionable, different types of shootings and reasons why things were supposedly, you know, we don't always get the truth story. That's a fact, you know. Anybody who believes that they got the truth, you know, you're putting a lot of faith in somebody who passed you information. That's why we always say right here, don't believe what we have to say. Hear what we have to say. Vet the information. Go out there and do your own research. Look around. And you're probably going to get fooled once or twice or maybe more. Because, you know, everything, unfortunately, as bad as this sounds, everything out there is questionable. Every bit of history, every bit of school books, every bit of research documents. And it's sad because we sit here right now on the mother load, quite literally, of information and technology. And we're at a crossroads where if we use this technology properly, we could build the most amazing world you could ever imagine, and then some, and we could pave the road so smoothly for our children into the future. This would be a wonderful thing. But right now, we've got these two entities fighting over power, one of which wants to enslave us, other of which may be their agenda just to make money off of us. Neither one of them's probably an honest agenda of making the world better, but you can see my point. There's two sides to every coin, and I don't want to pick the lesser of two evils when it comes down to whoever's going to represent me as a citizen, you know, to the world, and then turn around and tell me that, oh, look, these people over there attacked us when they didn't really attack us. It was somebody on our side that made it look like that so that we would go over there and risk our lives fighting for our country. That's not how it's supposed to be, people. That's not what we signed up for, you know. And the American dream, which is essentially just that, it's a dream. If you think that because Americans have some sort of semblance of freedom, then we still can say the words that we say without going to jail, and we still have defense of ourselves like it's the Second Amendment, the only reason why we're not getting treated like people around the world is because we have the right to keep and bear arms, and they're afraid of us. That's it. And they're afraid of you on the other side of the world because you have access to information that they don't necessarily want you to have access to, because it would steer your opinion towards wanting to stand out there and protest in the streets. You see what I mean? That's what's going on.
I'm for like this. If it's wrong against people, and I've always been like this ever since I was a baby. I mean, it's just me. If it's wrong against people, then it's wrong.
You
don't do things to people. One Black History Month, I actually listened to somebody that was a very, you know, a black man that is very highly educated on this. And I didn't know in the Constitution that it actually said that a black man is only three-quarter human. And it's still in the Constitution. I did not know that.
Well, you know what? It's really disheartening because whenever I'm out in public and I meet new people, especially people of other races, and I come to visit with them or whatever, you know, I meet them out in public, and I get this feeling in the back of my mind, like, you know, how will they perceive me, and I'm having to walk on eggshells to make contact with them, conversation with them, and try not to say something that's going to be offensive, because, you know, I understand the history of what's going on with their heritage and stuff like that. And so, as I'm standing there talking to somebody of a different color or race, the last thing that I ever want going through my mind is, are they going to perceive me as a racist? Are they going to perceive me as hateful or something like that? Am I going to say some word that is offensive to their culture but not offensive to my culture? And that steals away from me and that individual a chance to create some sort of bond or friendship, because, you know, of that awkward feeling that you get. You see what I'm trying to point out here?
Well, you know, Shaziz, I've been sitting with people, not government officials, but people, real people. And, you know, we raised the Mexican flag out here and sat with the individuals from Mexico. So I'm with you on this. And to be honest, we ate together, we talked together, and we had, you know, they had questions for about my culture. I had, you know, questions for theirs. And we found out we're not different at all. So, you know,
well, see,
you can do this thing.
See, Two Dog, you and I and Barbara, we can look right past all that, and we can see past the color and all the differences and stuff like that. But the deal is, do the other people know us enough to understand that we are like that? We see past that. You have to almost prove yourself every time you meet a new culture, and it's a shame. And that is a deliberate deal that has come down from this terrible system that we've all been basically entwined in. And, you know, I'm ashamed of things that people in the past did, but I'm not ashamed of what I've done through my life, because I've been good to people, and I don't look at people in a they're different or I'm better way. You know, I look at people if they present themselves as a people, that's how I look at them, you know, and that's me personally. But
I'm gonna ask Three Crow just a minute to step in just for a second on this, because here's the way I'm gonna go with you, Shaziz. If you look at history and what happened through history, they did it.
Yeah, we didn't.
In other words, you wasn't there, you didn't do it, neither was I. But if we can't talk now, and we can't learn through our history to be better than what they were.
That's right.
And that's what I'm saying. Three Crow, what do you think?
Is your microphone muted?
Yeah. Okay. Well, who's they when you say they did it?
Yeah, the notorious they. They're everywhere.
Well, what I'm talking about is you had leaders back from George Washington to Andrew Jackson that actually skinned Indian people to make their pants. Yeah. But what I'm saying is what individuals did back then, and you wasn't there, you didn't do it, you didn't have nothing to do with the Indian Wars here,
right?
And if you didn't, you wasn't there and you didn't do it, so why should I blame you for what they did?
Well,
you
that's
wasn't
what,
there.
So that's what people are saying. Well, I didn't do it, I wasn't there, you know. The things that happened in our cultures, pretty much throughout the world, you know, and especially here on Turtle Island, like I said before, it's like an imprint, you know, it's a cellular imprint, it's a cellular memory, it's brainwashing, you want to call it brainwashing.
Yeah.
It affects the generations, you know, it's like prejudice, for instance. And I've always said this, and I know you guys agree with me, that we are not born with hate, the ability to hate. Well, let's say we are not born with hate. We all have the ability to hate, but where does that come from? We are not born with prejudices. We are not born that way. We all have the ability to choose when it comes in our face, or when we're, you know, told that person over there is less than you, and so on and so forth. We're given the free will to choose, but when you're a child and you live in a household where there is hate or prejudices or abuses or violence, you, that is an imprint upon you. So we're talking a history here. Historically, we all have various imprints in our cellular experience, or our cellular memory, if you want to call it. Our personal experience you could say the world experience affects us all, because we are all part of the world. We are all here as one. We're talking energies and frequencies and cellular experiences, imprints, and this is what this is who we are, basically. We're all connected that way energetically. So, you know, you grow up, you're vulnerable. When you're a child, you're very vulnerable to imprints, input to what's going on in your surroundings. And you get in school and you learn false history. You learn, you know, all kinds of lies. And, of course, when you have a country that is taken over and colonized, the history is written according to the colonizers.
Yep.
And we all learned that. So what you could very easily say, well, I wasn't there. I didn't skin nobody. I didn't scalp anybody or whatever, you know. And that may be very true, but I think we have to look at our behavior. How am I behaving towards others? You know, what is my perspective about people of color? And so on. You know, how do I feel? What are my behaviors? How do I speak about other people? What are my thoughts? Because I found this out a while back. This is what I'm talking about. It's sort of like an energetic imprint upon our minds. Now, you may be a really good person. You may be a kind person, you know. But oftentimes, because of this imprint, and I'm going to just use as people of color, for instance, or people that are obese, or people that may not have much money, they're poor, so their clothes are kind of raggy. People have an automatic thought come into their head. They could be a good person, but there will be an imprint of a thought of prejudice or something about that other person just pop into their minds. And I've had that happen. And if you haven't had that happen, well, I don't know. Maybe you're not really seeing it, or maybe you just don't want to admit it.
I think everybody does. But the key to this whole deal, and the reason why this is so important to point out these kind of thoughts and prejudices or whatever, is that these divisive deals have been going on for so long, and I don't ever want to forget the past, because I want to use the past as a tool in order to be able to move on into the future, so that people understand that the terrible things that happened in the past are, you know, we cannot repeat them in the future. And for, you know, people to want to take down statues or things that they perceive to be racist. No, I think that those statues probably should stay up there as a reminder of what not to do, and tell the whole truth when you're talking history, as opposed to, you know, the rewritten truth, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but I agree with you.
We're enabling the corruption by allowing the people that are at the top to continuously stir this pot and make us look at each other different. You know, liberal versus Democrat. That in itself is divisive, because, you know, it tells me one day we could actually have a civil war that has liberals on one side and Democrats on the other. But if you go back and you follow it back to the man hiding behind the curtain, the one, the Jerry Springer effect, if you dig what I'm saying, that there was a man behind the scenes getting this guy to fight against this one and getting that one to fight back, and in the meantime, he's making money off the show, and that is exactly what we're seeing right now. They are making money off the show. As long as we're killing each other, they're making money. As long as we're buying into their propaganda and watching their TV commercials and their, you know, circuses and stuff like that, they're making money. Once again, I'm not anti-government. I'm anti-corruption. And
now, let me ride with you on that. Now, you know what I'm doing, Chaziz, you know, and y'all, everybody that is listening to this radio knows what my nation is doing right now as far as all the flags are concerned. I was floored. I'm going to be honest. I was floored a couple of years ago because this thing's been going for about 2 years now. And I went to the mailbox and I actually opened it up and I brought the mail home and I opened up a mail, piece of mail that was in my name and I have no idea who sent this thing. And when I opened it up, I saw the Virginia battle flag as far as the Confederate flag is concerned. So I'm thinking somebody hurt me. I evidently touched somebody and they sent me this thing. It's in the tote. I got two totes full. But what I'm saying is, it's not the flag, it's what you do behind it. But I actually got that flag and it just floored me. That, somebody heard it. That maybe I changed mind or something. I don't know.
Well,
you see what I'm saying?
Well, I think this whole thing about race, again, is one of the imprints. It's a deliberate imprint to separate us. You know, because I think we're all the human race. We're all people. You know, there's no separation. You know, this is, and I think that all of this has been part of, you know, the agenda is to separate us against each other.
Well,
you know,
I want to point something out for you, Barbara. You in the super chat room?
Hold on, yep.
Click on that link I just posted in there. Tell me what your thoughts on that is.
Okay.
Well, you know, what I'm trying to, you know, what I've been saying on this radio, and I've been saying on Chaziz Radio, and been saying for a long time, it's not about the color of a person. It's the human being. We got to look at the human being. It's not about color, man. We're all human beings here.
Yeah, and we're a lot more powerful than people think we are, and hopefully this thing I shared with Barbara might get that point across.
Well, it's true. You know the statement, we live in a small world, and well, the world is getting smaller, but this is true, the 6 degrees of separation, it's really important, this piece. Of course, this is done through studies and over time and so on, but it's really the idea that all living things and everything else in the world are 6 or fewer steps away from each other, so that a chain of a friend and so on statements, in other words, when we say, you know so-and-so, oh yeah, I know so-and-so and he's a cousin of my great auntie or blah 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 whatever, and there you go down the thread, that these kinds of statements, a friend of a friend, can be made to connect any two people in a maximum of 6 steps. So it's like, it tells us basically that we live in a very small world and we are interconnected. And I mean, you can go back to the whole study of who were the first woman, who were the first man. You can go back that far. You can go back to what they're finding. Oh, I just came up with this amazing, I'll have to see if I can find it while we're talking. A recent discovery, although this skeleton was found in, I think, Great Britain or somewhere over there in the UK. And originally they thought it was a white-skinned person. And with new technology, they found out that, in fact, this was a person of dark skin, more softer flowing hair, and also blue eyes, and very dark skin, actually, and they did new tests on this, and they found this, but what they're saying is basically the Britons are going to be in for a big surprise.
Yeah, I saw that.
About their ancestors.
I saw that.
Yeah, well, you did.
With this 6 degree of separation thing, when we talk about, you know, passing information along, you share that information with 6 people, and imagine how far that piece of information could quite literally travel. And I hope you know where I'm leading with this, because you're more powerful than you think you are. You think that, you know, well, you know, I really can't do nothing about nothing, but you can quite literally spread the truth to so many people, and if you present that information properly and they understand it to be truth, or even if you want to go as far as to say they believe it to be true, nonetheless, that information will go. Well, you think that I'm the only one who's ever seen this article about 6 degrees of separation? The governments know it as well. And they know that by, you know, all they got to do is get out there on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, and they contact 6 people with some disturbing information who will tell their 6 other people about disturbing information and on down the line. And you got basically an enabler for the government to continue corruption, because you just propagandized enough people that can actually quite literally reach around the globe. It's that easy. And when people... when the average Joe finally gets it, understands how this game is played against them, then, you know, in order to win at a game of chess, you need to know the rules of the game of chess. Well, most people don't understand the rules of chess. They don't understand the rules of checkers. And so, and when they play the games, they'll make up their own rules. Well, if you're going to play by the play the game with the so-called leadership and the corporations and the so-called elite of the world, secret societies, they're playing a game right now with you. They're playing a game that gets them money, finances, luxury, everything like that. And when you understand that game that they're playing with you, and one of the tools being this knowledge right here that 6 degrees of separation gives you the power to put information all over the place. Does that make any sense the way I explained it to you guys?
Yeah. I also just found that link. I popped it in both chats. This man is the discovery first modern Briton had dark skin. And, of course, they're saying it's a reminder that we are all from Africa, and I'm not saying I agree with that, but I'm just saying, you got to look at this site, this link. This is Britain's oldest complete skeleton, is 10,000 years old, and the DNA analysis of Britain's oldest modern human has provided unprecedented insight into the appearance of ancient Britons, and a reminder that we all come from somewhere in Africa. So, generally, people would be very surprised to see, you know, this, they call it Cheddar Man because it's a certain area that was called Cheddar something, I can't remember where it was, but an individual from 10,000 years ago, what he really looked like. And, they're talking about this, genetic examination of the bones that were discovered. He was discovered in a Somerset cave in 1903. He has dark to black skin, blue eyes, and dark curly hair. You know, so this is a shock to a lot of people. And I have to tell you this story. I was looking at this. You know, when people want to go to, they give their saliva test to find out what their ancestors, where they come from. You know, the DNA test.
Yeah.
Well, they had a panel showing this, what happened. They had a group of people, maybe a group of people about 12 from different parts of the, you know, states and different places and so on, who basically wanted to find out who their ancestors were. So they had different people in the audience that they interviewed before they took the test, the DNA test. And there were people there talking about, well, what are your feelings about this group of people? Well, what do you feel about that group of people? And you had some downright, really prejudiced people saying, well, I don't like Arabs. I think they're all dirty. Or I don't like black people because they're dumb. Or, I mean, really outright people were talking like this. And all people said, well, all my ancestors were white. I'm a white person, period. So we had that going on. And then they did the DNA studies of these people, right? And they sat them down at the table, and you had people of Asian, people of, European, people of Africa, various people there in that audience, you know, being tested. And it was really quite remarkable, because when they sat there and they were told what their ancestors were, you know, their jaws dropped. You know, I mean, there was one guy who was claiming he's pure white. His people were white. They came to this country as white people. In fact, you know, his ancestry was showing that he had a black heritage. You know, you should have seen that man's jaw drop. And then you had this other couple, young people. They weren't a couple. They were two younger people, maybe in their 30s. And they happened to find out that they were related way back. And they're both, you know, one was a darker skinned and the other one was, you know, was a white, light skinned. But that they were related way back. Way back.
I think that the majority of the people in this world would be surprised at who their ancestors were.
Well, you know, we have a saying in our Indian way. It's the word is Metakuye Oyasin. Metakuye Oyasin. And it means we are all related.
Yep.
And that means everybody.
And so would you agree that 6 degrees of separation is a big deal when it comes down to, you know, the quite literally the true power that people have to connect to each other?
Well, I do. Here's the thing, you know, so you have a scientific study, okay, so here we go again. Well, we know that there are some things that scientists are paid off to fudge and all that, but if you have this 6 degrees of study going on, you know, as a legitimate study, and we have in our way saying Metakuye Oyasin, we are all related. Okay, so you have an ancient culture. The Lakota people and other Indian people say that we are all related.
Yep.
So when you have this going on, and part of the teachings that I share with people is that the reason we have to look at this piece that we are all related is that we are connected on a deeper level than we could ever imagine. And it's not just by, you know, our ancestry. It's energetically.
Yeah.
It's, right? So this is a piece, and we're working more and more with the information coming about energies and frequencies. And this particular teaching is about the power that we have to manifest or create change, that we are constantly manifesting. In other words, we are constantly creating with our emotions, our thoughts, and our words, because they have a power. We know words are powerful.
Yep.
You know, you can really floor somebody. You can devastate somebody with your words. That's a power.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with emotion, and it's the same thing, believe it or not, with thought. All of these things are vibrational frequencies. They're waves of energy. That's the power that we have. And we can change, we can have a change, an impact change with what we choose to do, how we choose to function, how we choose to speak about things, how we focus, what we're focusing on, what we believe in. Even believing has a power.
Yeah, and that's probably why I keep trying to point these kind of things out to people, is that we're not helpless against this system. Even as bad as this system is, we have never been helpless against them. We just don't understand how to utilize the power that is within each of us and all of us together combined.
Well, you have a deliberate process here. I'll use the word agenda, which we've been talking about, is, you know, to keep us separated, to imprint, you know, differences, to tell us that, well, we're better than those people because they, you know, they're shabbily dressed, or they have a different color, or slaves, black people aren't human, and Indian people aren't human, they're animals, they don't even have a soul. These are things that started a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You know, and listen, there are white poor people, we know, who have gotten a raw deal too, just because they're poor.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying it's just black people or Indian people or just people of color. Well, white is a color too.
Well, let me go with this and let you understand how I do things. If I go to a school and I teach the native way to the kids, the first thing I say to them is I say it in my language, like Osio Duhichu, hello, how are you? And I also say hello to my relations, which are them. And they kind of look at me. And one child, I was doing something, I can't remember everything, but I was having the children raise their hand and, you know, if they had questions. And one child, I remember, raised their hand, and I said, yes, I said, yeah, and I pointed to him to speak, and I had to point to him a couple of times, and he did stand up. And he had a question for me that just kind of floored me. And the question he had was, does your people still kill white guys and cowboys and eat them like you used to?
That's messed up.
Well, yeah, there you go. There's an imprint for sure, you
but
know.
That's what his family told him he did.
And who told his family?
And who told his family? That's another deal.
Well, so the thing about scalping, for instance, do your study, do your research, you know. So all the Indians scalped the white, soldiers. Well, actually, the scalping started with the white people because they actually got paid. They got paid big time for our scalps. You know, they were told, if you bring us Indian scalps, we'll pay you. And so that was a good reason to go get some money. But now it wasn't just the Indian people. Anybody that had black hair or whatever, you know, so there were all different kinds of people that were, you know, getting scalped. But that started that. So that's a big lie, you know.
I think it was $25 for a child.
Yeah, $25, you know, and then for more body parts or whatever. But like you said, Two Dog, and we've known this is true, that during the massacres of the people, you know, they would take body parts. Of the women and of the men, and they'd parade them around, hanging them over their saddles and wearing them. And I mean, these are atrocities that were revered as good.
It was told by the late Fred Red Crow Westerman that when his people was being transferred to the reservation and it went through a town, they had female vital parts on their hats and their saddles.
That's right. That's
disgusting.
And
that
when they went through the town, you had women that was actually in like second, third story windows, actually throwing urine on the people as they walked past them.
Well, these are the horrors that humans can actually do. These are heartbreaking things, because it's not just done to people of color. I mean, let's face it, these atrocities throughout history have been upon all colors of people, you know. So I'm not saying that we're the only ones that had this happen. What I'm talking about is this level of darkness and evil that puts people against each other. And because we are all human beings, I don't care what color you are, and I don't care what religion you prefer, we all have a heart, we all have a liver, we all have a gallbladder, we all have an appendix, we have eyes, two eyes, nose, ears, two hands, feet. We are all human beings. We don't have fur on our bodies or, you know, walk on all fours. We're human. We're human beings. So we cry, we feel, we have sadness, we have emotion, we have all human qualities, every one of us. I don't care how uneducated you are. As a human being, you have the same heart that I do. You cry, you laugh. We're all the same, but something has pitted us against each other. History has lied to us about who did this and who did that and who's to blame and how bad you are or how good you are, what you deserve, what you don't deserve. We've been brainwashed to believe that we are helpless and those people over there are making it worse for us, so let's go get them. Let's kill them because they're making our lives miserable, you know.
And they even have gone as far through history and education, come up with different words to you know, represent, like, for example, anti-Semitism, you know, if you look up the definition of
that. Well, it's politically incorrect. You know, this is a new ploy that they're pushing on us, by the way, and you have to be very, you know, we have to be aware and alert about the systematic hatred and violence and imprinting these, you know, politically correct or politically incorrect. Now you cannot, for instance, you can't, if you are saying that what's going on there, the genocide in the Middle East against the Palestinians and others, if you start talking about that, about what Israel's policies are, you know, destroying a culture, genocide, that's really what it is. But nobody, you can't dare say genocide. You know, you will be attacked. Well, then you're anti-Semitic then.
Yeah, it says anti-Semitism is a hostility to prejudice or discrimination against Jews. A person who holds such position is called an anti-Semite.
Yeah, why is it? Right, but exactly.
Here's the thing that really bothers me about all these different labels and terminology, you know, homophobic, xenophobic, anti-Semite, and all this kind of stuff, is that I don't care what culture you're from. In every single culture, I honestly believe that there are good people that may be misguided by whatever, but they... Yeah. To paint everybody with a wide brush, see, the scales of justice to me are so far off balance every time one of these terms are used because, for example, you know, they're talking about, you know, all white people should be ashamed of everything. And I'm sitting here thinking, wait a second, you know, I'm sort of white. I'm not all white because I've got other heritage. And, you know, while I feel some remorse about what my ancestors may or may not have been involved in, I know that myself as a person aren't like that. And so to paint me and say that, you know, because of my the shade of my skin that I should, you know, be ashamed or leave, this isn't something that was accidental, all right? This is...
It's like this, Shaziz, and I'll give it to you, Three Crow. It's like this, my brother. I shouldn't hate you for what Andrew Jackson did. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I was going to say, you know, again, this is a deliberate... We have to keep remembering that there is something going on here that is a deliberate to separate us, to keep us fighting each other, to... you know, be terrified of others, to hate others, and you know, look at, there's no, I don't think there's any pure, well, here's the word races again, you know, we're becoming a rainbow culture, you know, you have, like, for instance, that discovery of the DNA of this, you know, Briton here, who's actually very dark-skinned and blue-eyed, and where all these people over there probably think, hey, I'm a you know, white European, you know, you have these people in that DNA test sitting there who are claiming, well, I'm white, my people are white, and they're actually got African ancestry. So these are the truths, you know, we're all one people, we're all children of a creator, you know, and so why is this going on? It has been going on, it's a deliberate thing. I feel very strongly this is a deliberate thing to pit us against each other, to keep hate in the forefront. This is just my perspective, but because our teachings, our way, is that we are all related. We are all one big family of many colors.
Well, I believe that as well, and I also believe that these terminologies to basically, you know, get hatred stirred up, you know, like if I'm being blamed for something that I had no part in, I can feel a little bit of anger inside because I knew I had no part in it, and so that might make me look a little different towards the particular culture that they're using this terminology to separate us. But this, once again, is just another tool to allow the corruption to continue. This, when we label each other, we allow these people to use these labels. If I come out and say something that is politically incorrect, they can come out and say, well, he's an anti-Semite, or he's a, he's a homophobe or whatever, you know, and they can use that to get other people's opinion against me. In the meantime, that might actually get us into a fight, me and these other people, you know, and in the process of that fight, somebody goes to jail, well, they just made more money. In the process of that fight, they get a good news story, and somebody just made more money, more advertisement. Folks, what I'm trying to say here is they're using the power of words to literally distort the truth, to rewrite history, to tell things that aren't even remotely close to reality, to keep you pitted against each other so that you can't find your true power.
Right. Well, listen to this now. It's up to us today and to teach our children, when are we going to, stop hating? I'm getting froggy. When are we going to stand up and stop falling into the pattern that we've been, you know, pressured and indoctrinated into? So if somebody says to me, well, you know, your people were responsible for my people's demise or whatever, your people tortured my people. I'm talking about, you know, what happened here, like you say, like Two Dogs said before, you know, I'm not responsible for my ancestors who came here. You know, my ancestors came here from Europe and from Ireland and England and so on, and they landed here on this land. I don't know what they were involved in. I do know the history of what a lot of the Europeans were involved in, but some of my ancestors married into the Natchitoches, Lenape, Delaware people. You know, Two Dog and I are probably cousins. what they call the 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm saying, people say, well, I'm not responsible. You know, I didn't do anything. I'm here in the, you know, 20th century. I didn't do anything. I'm living here in modern world. I'm not responsible. But what is that doing? What about, you know, I kind of know the history about what happened in this country because I've done a little bit of research, and, you know, I hear what you're saying, and what happened to your people never should have happened to your people. No one should ever go through that, and I'm really sorry what happened to your people. Let's be friends right now. Let's make a change here. I'm going to reach out to you, you know, with my hand, and let's shake hands.
This is why I believe that mission that Two Dog is on is of such grave importance, because the flags of they're symbols, all right, of all these different all these different places, all these different people. And what I'm seeing here is by bringing a representative from each of these people and actually being able to sit down, you know, next to the Tree of Peace and sit down and talk about, you know, we know that all these terrible atrocities happened in the past, but the question is, what are we going to do from now on? Are we going to move forward and work together to ensure that these things never occur? This is why I believe that Two Dog's mission is more important and of such a higher spiritual something going on to reconnect that big family that everybody's a part of, if I'm making any sense of what I'm trying to say.
You know, here's the thing, Shaziz. I have learned in my time, because when I was younger, I used to question the Creator about everything. That's what I did. I questioned everything when I was a kid. What I did, I saw a vision. And this vision, it actually was so bright that it blinded me for a bit. And I thought I was just sitting there for a few minutes, and turned out to be 3 hours later. What I consider is when that spirit that I saw handed me toward these beads, I immediately knew it was beads of peace in my mind. And what I'm doing is just it's a peace of all people around the world. That's what I'm saying, and that's what these flags symbolize.
Well, people
also
could,
that we are relatives, and this should not be happening. We can't get along.
If people could meet like we do here on the round table and have a respectful conversation and understanding of each other's journey to where we are now, how they got here, then we should be able to come across some sort of middle ground that everybody can stand on, not forgetting the past or trying to demean or diminish the importance of the struggles that every culture had been through, but to use that knowledge that we all know of the past, instead of firing at each other via hate, to start working towards a resolution that will ensure that the future generations never have to hear these terminologies such as anti-Semite, homophobe, xenophobe, and every other label that society likes to put on each other to try to demean one another. You see what I'm saying?
Let me say that every time I went to the mailbox and I've gotten a gift like that, as far as every flag I've ever gotten, if you could see a face light up.
Oh, I can visualize it, brother.
Every one I've ever got, it's like a light turns on. And I'm like, somebody believes in exactly what I'm saying, is that we have peace and we are related, and somebody's heard this message. I mean, look at what we're doing. We got two different spiritualities that are talking on this radio station right now, and we're quite getting along.
Yeah, and that's all we want for the rest of the world out there, you know.
Well, I have to say, you know, what's coming to my mind is we all need each other. I don't care who you are. There's going to come a time when we're really going to need each other. And you have to clean up your act.
Yeah.
We really have to clean up our act. You know, and I always use the term, always there for the grace of God go I. You know, so if you have this hate and prejudice in your in your teaching, if you were taught that, you weren't born with that. So if you were taught that, because I'm going to say it, I'm going to keep saying it, you were taught to hate, you were taught to be prejudiced, you were taught to separate from others, you were taught to make judgments upon others as people were taught to make judgments upon you. So how are we ever going to get along when we really need each other? Because we are really needing each other, and it's going to get more so where we really need each other. We can't keep this mess up because we're being manipulated to do this, you know?
Yeah.
What the hate you carry in your heart is making you sick.
It is.
It's just, that's it. The hate that you have in your heart is making your heart sick. Heart sick. And it's also making, you know, giving you a headache and a stomach ache and who knows all what else.
Well, not to mention all the distractions of all the different events going on there, even the dog and pony show, like Starman driving in space, you know, critical thinking, and that event right there got people out there arguing amongst each other whether it's fact or fiction. And so, you know, there's got to be some wisdom somewhere along the line.
It's up to us that we have to reach out. We really all have to start doing that. We all have to listen to what is in our mind, the monkey mind that's telling us a judgment against another person. You have to take responsibility for being a human being on this earth. By Creator sent you here, put you here. You know, if you believe in a Creator, a God, a Great Spirit, Wankantanka, Gichimanitu, does not matter. We're all children of the earth. You're here for a reason. Is this why we're here? To hate each other and to be angry and hate each other and stomp on each other? I don't think that's what Creator's idea.
Shaziz, Barb, what I want to do, what I'm trying to do is, you know, I don't question the Creator anymore. I just do. But, when I go to the sky world or heaven or whatever you want to call this, and my ancestors look at me and say, grandson, what did you do while you were there? I want to try to give them the best. I did the best I could. I want to tell them I did the best I could while I was here. All of us are here for a reason, or we would not be here.
There's a review. Let's say every religion and every spiritual way has a what is called a review. You know, like when we say to the, what you just spoke about is, and I often tell people this, you know, the grandmothers and the grandfathers are waiting on the other side. And when we leave this physical world, we will meet them. And they will be sitting there and they will say to us, grandson, granddaughter, we gave you a job to do on earth. How did you do? You know, and then another religion will say, well, the angels are going to meet you, or you're going to be crossing a bridge and you're going to be some light beings there, or an angel's going to be there and they're going to show you your life in a split second, less than a split second. You're going to have a review of what you did or didn't do, what you spoke about, how you acted, all of that. Or any other religions probably have the same thing, you know, varying degrees of the same kind of review, you know, So this is why I say we've got to clean up our act here, you know, because what are you here for? You know, what are we here for? What are we doing here?
Well, I'm just trying to do the best I can with what I have to work with, and I'm trying to do whatever it takes to get the ball rolling that would, you know, start steering this bus in the right direction instead of the wrong direction. I posted in the Skype chat right down here, and I also posted in the all four of the chat rooms over there at the superchat.html. All right, and there's an eBay link, and this is basically it's a set of 50 flags, and I'm still saving myself, because even if I have to do it by myself, I'm still going to make this happen. I want 2Dog to have that collection. I want him to have that collection because I believe in the dream, the mission that he's on, the spiritual journey that he's trying to accomplish, and I want to one day be able to see those flying under the tree of peace that's in his land. And you know, I believe that 2Dog's intentions are honorable, and I believe that his mission is true. And to send a signal out to the rest of the world, I would love to see the mainstream media come out there and shine their cameras on that tree with all them flags around, and so that people out there would see this, they would get a message that there are individuals in this world that are quite literally trying to end the division amongst the different cultures and the different nations. And try to bring us together. You know, to some people this might not be, you know, might not be that big of a deal, but to 2Dog it's a big deal. To me it's a big deal, and I'm sure to Barbara and everybody else who's understood what his vision was about this, it's a big deal. And in order to get, you know, to anywhere in this world, you have to make the first step to a journey. You know, and I think that if there's anybody out there who happens to listen to this, you know, it may be a podcast year down the road, so disregard it if it's years later, because we probably already got it accomplished. But nonetheless, if you're listening to this at a pretty reasonable date and you want to help that happen, you know, contact one of us on 2Dog's Skype or something like that, or on my Skype, and we'll figure out a way to make this part of his vision, to make it a reality, because I believe that when those flags fly underneath that tree of peace, the symbolism, the power of somebody being able to visually see that somebody's vision, somebody's dream of bringing people together, the peace, is bringing to set them down at the table and to talk about the issues that they've had to contend with, the issues that they want to try to get resolved. Every single peace treaty comes together with a gathering. And if it's a gathering of good-hearted individuals who are serious about what they say about making the world a better place, I believe this is a good start. What are you guys' thoughts?
I agree with you, yeah. I'm going to bring us in a little bit of a direction here, a different direction. And, you know, we are living in the time of prophecy. Many prophecies given by different cultures, our elders in the Indian way, ancient cultures, you know, Bible prophecies. We're living in the time of prophecies, and we see these prophecies unfolding. And it's extraordinary that here in our lifetime, in this very moment, the amount of prophecies that are coming true.
Oh, I believe it.
Now, you know, I say prophecy is not written in stone. Prophecy is given us as sort of like warnings where you can know maybe what's going to be happening, and you can, if you choose, start changing something to affect that prophecy. That's my belief. Now, that's what I feel about prophecy, but the divine plan is something different, like Creator's divine plan. You know, that's Creator's doing. That's Creator's business. It's not my business. But we are given these bits and pieces of prophecy because they come through in a way that is from Spirit. So I feel that these are opportunities for us. You know, they're given to us. Like, okay, I'm going to just throw this at you and let's see what you all do with this. Because here's something that you can take and make a change if you want to, okay? I believe in prayer. I believe in prayer is powerful. And I want to say that supposing that, you know, the Great Spirit is there saying, you know, these are all my children, you know, like I let my children go out into this Mother Earth, gave them this paradise here. Everything they ever needed was here for them. I love my children. I want to give them everything that they need, clean water, all the fruits and the seeds that will be abundant, health and the medicines there on the land for them. And they'll live there with, you know, with the creatures and the animals that I also love, you know, and that they will help the people if they are respectful, you know, they will, all things will be in a good way. You know, this is a mother, father, creator that let the children out here, seated all the sacred beings, the children and all that we share the land here with, you know. So prophecy is amazingly unfolding in our lifetime. And I feel that we always meet in our lives, you know, two pathways. Throughout our life, there will be a pathway, one going this direction, another one going that direction. Now, I don't believe in mistakes. I believe in that when we choose a pathway, we will find what we need there to advance us, to help us to grow, to get closer to, you know, the mystery or the great mystery. So I don't believe in mistakes, you know, but I think that we have at a point here in time of choosing, a big time of choosing. Either you're going to choose the dark or the light, okay? This is the teachings, I suppose, or the opportunities to grow. I'm going to call it the state of grace. That state of grace is being lifted away from us. Now we are at the point where it's the dark and the light. This is a spiritual battle we are experiencing right now. I think it's one of the most significant spiritual battles, probably that humanity has ever come across. So, you know, I believe that the prophecies are unfolding, but I do believe that we can affect certain prophecies through the changes that we choose to make. And then again, ultimately, everything is up to Creator, but so I saw this vision years ago. I've talked about this, you know, on the radio before. I was in a really dire circumstance, very dire circumstance, really battling and dealing with a very dark situation, being spiritually and physically attacked. And in that moment, you know, I had my eyes closed and I saw something in the dark field in front of me, and it was a light. A light, a very distant light, but also the whole universe appeared. The whole cosmic realm appeared in this field. And way in the distance, in that field of the cosmos, I saw this light glowing, and it started to move. It started to get closer and closer. And I'm watching this with my eyes closed, and I'm intrigued. I'm wondering, what is this? This is, wow, the cosmos, look at this, is miraculous. And I'm watching this little spark come closer and closer and grow and grow. And when I finally realized I'm looking, I'm saying, this is the Holy Mother. The Mother was floating through the cosmos, and behind her was a host of angels. And I'm using that expression, you've probably heard it before, that's the only term that I could come up with, because behind the Mother, the Holy Mother, was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and probably thousands and beyond of light beings, and I was calling them the hosts of angels. That's a term that we pretty much know of, and that's what popped into my mind. And I heard the mother say, "We are coming. We are coming, and we are bringing peace and harmony and joy." You know, I'm sitting there in the circumstance with tears rolling down my eyes because this was touched me so deeply, right? So I did get out of that. I was really saved to get out of this circumstance. It was a really, really big spiritual challenge for me, very rough circumstance, and I was helped out of that by spirit. And then I guess I remembered those words, "We are coming, we are coming." And I think it was, now that's like 3 years ago, going on 4 years. And last year, with all that I'm seeing happening and everything, and the rising of insanity and chaos and whatever people are doing here, I went outside and I was sitting there and I was praying. And I said to the Holy Mother, Creator, Great Spirit, I said, "Okay, you told me that you were coming, that you were bringing peace, love, and joy. So what happened?" And I listened, and I got the response, "Well, it's up to the people to come into that frequency of love, peace, and be joyous." And then it will be present. In other words, we have a job to do.
Well, that's why I keep saying, I think this thing with these flags, it's important. It's just another step of bringing people together. It's not the only step, but it's another step. Does that make any sense?
Well, yes, but listen, I'm talking about something. I'm talking about a level of awareness, of consciousness. I'm talking about, you know, the flags is a good thing. It's a first step. It's a good step. But what I'm talking about is individually our frequency.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Our compassion, being that, being a peaceful person, being a loving, compassionate person, choosing to be peaceful, that's a frequency. The frequency of that divine energy of the Holy Mother and the hosts of angels or Creator, whatever you want to call it, the unconditional love that Creator, Mother, Father created, birthed us as, that's never ending. But we ourselves have turned away from that energy. We have chosen to be hateful or separate or prejudiced or unkind or mean or judgmental. We have chosen these things. That disconnects us from the love, the joy, and the peace that is ever present, and the unconditional love of Creator, Mother, Father. That's a high frequency, and this is part of prophecy. Is the fifth world 1,000 years of peace. The doorways had opened in 2012 for that to unfold. Where are we on a scale from 1 to 10, I'll use, with our frequency? Because if we don't rise up our frequencies and become more aware consciously of these frequencies, these energies that we are emanating out with every thought, every word, and every emotion, and every action, where are we? Are we in alignment with that divine frequency, with that frequency of peace and joy? If not, that's the act. We better start cleaning up because the doorway's open.
Well, I think that actions can inspire to great extents if given a chance, that even those folks out there that may be making the wrong choices at any given time, the corruption that we're talking about, it's basically we're enabling that to even occur, because I honestly believe that we really physically and spiritually have the power to change this world if we choose to do so. And I think that's what you just got through saying.
Yeah, and I'm gonna talk about Two Dog, Chief Charles Two Dog. I want to say Pila Maya and Wopila for what you're doing. You're following your vision. Creator gave you a vision. And yes, that little spark of light, that divine light, that spark of light and peace and compassion and love that you are growing there, you know, right on the land and with your people. Mm-hmm. This is a power that I'm talking about. And when someone decides to send you a flag, that adds to that light, that adds to the peace. That's a frequency. They're thinking in their heart about this. They're not thinking in their mind, I'm going to gain something from this, you know, in a negative way. They're coming from their heart in a good way. So this is how this multiplies. This is what I'm talking about, our actions. And from our heart, what we determine to do adds to the high frequency of what that the Holy Mother said that was coming. It's ever present, but it's up to us to participate. And you are participating, and so I say to you, you know, Lila Washte and Wopila.
I seen a video one time that wasn't really the, you know, the greatest video that I've ever seen, but it had an inspirational message that just quite literally blew me away. Is that there was a particular event going on, and there were people that came from miles and miles around, and it was basically a candlelight vigil. And in this video, you could see that there were so many people crowded into this one area, and that the people weren't just in that area. They were all the way down the street. They were around the corner. They were down the side roads, in the alleys, and all over the place. There must have been thousands of people there holding candles for, you know, certain individuals. And to me, that was the most inspiring visual that I ever saw in my life, that all these people, even though they may have had differences among each other, came together for a common cause. And that, to me, is the visual that I'm trying to portray about what my belief of what Two Dog and his flags underneath the Tree of Peace would represent. If all these people, it would be so much better if 50 people from 50 states came in just to represent those 50 states, and people from every single nation and every single place crowded in there, just like that candlelight visual. You could see people for miles and miles and miles trying to come together under, you know, one idea like that.
Let me explain this situation in a lot of ways. If you take one arrow, it's easily to be broken. But if you take a bundle, you can't break it. But here's the thing that I wanted to relay to people about this. About these flags and everything about this, it's not about Two Dog whatsoever. It's not about me. I'm not making a thing out of this. It's about my relations, and that means the world. We're not different. Culturally, but as human beings,
As a representative of your nation, they could not have picked a better individual to represent their nation. And as far as your nation's history and how far back and all the things that your nation had to endure to basically remain today, your nation has every justification for being upset at many different other nations and many different other cultures for the way that history had treated your people and your land. And yet, here you are, as a representative of this nation, of that past, willing to put all that hatred and all the things that came about in the past that you had to endure as a culture, as a nation, as a family, and you are sitting here telling the world that we're here at the Tree of Peace, and we're willing to extend our hand out to you and asking you to do the same and to spread that message throughout the world. See, that's what that means to me when I think about a Tree of Peace and all these flags and your journey that you're on. You know, I understand
that humbles me greatly. It really does humble me greatly. But you know, the thing about it is, there was one leader a long time ago, and he stated that there was enough land for all.
Yeah, and I believe that as well.
So here's what I'm saying. Only thing I'm saying is that if there's a 7-year-old child in Syria, and she is completely disorganized, just functionalized because a bomb dropped. He was singing, "That's my child. That's my child too."
Yep, I believe it.
And the only thing I'm saying is that we're all human beings. This whole flag movement that I got going on, it's not about me at all. It's about the people. It's about people in general. It's all people. And that's what it's about.
And I get that. And I want to be one of those people standing beside you, brother, on that journey. You know?
Well, I wanted to tell this story here about... I was riding in the car a couple of years ago and listening to this program, and this study, for 4-year study, these people were talking about how they determined to see what would happen if on a specific date and day and time, if this group of people in different parts of the world sat down and together, even though they were in different parts of the world, focused on love and peace and healing, what would happen. They did this for 4 years, and they studied different things in each one of those countries. And they studied the effects of, you know, what, how many arrests there were, how many emergencies there were, how many negative damaging things went on in their countries, and so on and so forth. And every time they would sit down on the prescribed date and time together in different parts of the world and went into this focus of harmony and balance and peace, they noticed changes in their countries. They noticed that there were less arrests, less emergencies, less, you know, a drop in police incidences, you know, negative things, catastrophes, violence, murders, and even the stock market went up in all these countries at these prescribed times. So, you know, these are studies that were done. I mean, that just validated to me what I've been teaching for many years, what I received as guidance to teach about the power that we were given by Creator to make a difference.
Well, and you one time had mentioned about how big the top of the tree is, that the roots underneath there would be about the same. And even in my culture or my belief system that says as above, so it shall be below, there's, if you really seriously get into what was just said there, it's so profound. I would love to see in every single nation somebody plant their own tree of peace. And even if we all can't show up on Two Dogs Land to be there at that given time with him, we could still gather people in our nations that want the same thing and do the same thing.
You know, Shaziz, I really truthfully, and I'm going to say it because we've been on this station now talking very good with each other. So what I'm going to say, you know, for those who are listening, I really feel that there's a new wind on its way. And for those who don't feel, it's going to be completely blown away.
I agree with you, brother. I honestly believe that we're actually moving forward. As surprising as it sounds, and as much as we've talked about, you know, between the corruption and the constant fear-mongering that the world likes to keep us in a continuous state of disarray and, you know, pitted against one another, these conversations that we're having, they're resonating with people out there. I know it. I see it.
And well, you know, I'm going to stand for peace as much as I can. And the way I think of myself, you can kill my body if you want to, but you're not going to stop my spirit. It's going to keep going.
Well, I believe that as well.
You know, I'm kind of snickering here, laughing a bit to myself, because there's a an article here saying the long-awaited medical study questions the power of prayer. I find this amusing, in a way, because in our culture, in the Indian culture, we know the power of prayer. We live, right, Two Dog?
Yeah.
Yes, every day.
I mean, we live that way. We live, we call it walking in a sacred manner. And also every step you take is a prayer.
Prayer.
Yes. So this is a way of life. It's not something you do on a Sunday. You know, it's a way of life. So when you have a long-awaited medical study that is questioning the power of prayer, I find that amusing. But, you know, just reflecting on a year ago, a little over a year now, of what was going on at Standing Rock, you know, with the water protectors there and the prayer, the constant prayers, because, you know, this was all set up as a peaceful protest against the assault upon the waters, not only just for the nation there, but for the millions of people downstream, you know, that were going to be affected by the imminent leak of the oil pipes, which happened, by the way, and is historically true. So the power of prayer. So, you know, the scientists have to do studies, they have to have grants, they get a lot of money, you know, to do these studies about the power of prayer and so on and so forth, which is, to me, is kind of laughable and pitiful, really, that they have to do this. So you have to, so then the scientists say this or that about prayer, and then people are going to say, oh, well, the scientists said this or that, you know, the authorities spoke. But for us, you know, this is a given. We are born into nations, you know, knowing and understanding the power that prayer has.
You know, it made me laugh, Barbara, with what you said, because if you talk about the power of prayer, how come every time I do one, I get thrown off here? It's that strong, isn't it?
Yeah.
How come you what? I didn't hear you.
I said, how come every time I do a prayer on these stations, I get knocked off?
Well, there you go, you know. I mean, listen.
How strong is it?
Yeah.
How strong is it? It's, well, the fact that, you know, and people could say, well, what happened at Standing Rock, they didn't stop the pipe. But you know what? They brought the world together.
Yes, they did.
And that's what the purpose was. And they also the young women were the ones who started this. And this is another prophecy unfolding about the women coming together. And the men and women, then they all joined together, the men and women. Young people, old people, many different colors came from all over the world and all over the Turtle Island. That's another prophecy being fulfilled. The Rainbow Warriors rising. That's another prophecy being fulfilled. You know, the Black Snake prophecy. There it is, right in our face. The Black Snake represents these pipelines going across the Mother Earth, strangling the Mother Earth, usurping all of her resources, her life's blood. These are prophecies that are unfolding, and then you have another one of the light and the positive unfolding. Simultaneously, these prophecies are running side by side, you know.
Well, there's a lot to be said about it, because if you listen to things like Paul Harvey said back in 1965, you know, there's a certain point when you get past the word coincidence, like Two Dog was mentioned, as many times as he's been hassled while he's trying to say a prayer, you know, once, maybe a coincidence, twice, maybe, you know, but every time, no, there's a difference going on there. It's somebody don't want him saying certain things. It's like somebody don't want us saying certain things, and we see it throughout history. You know,
well, who would that be?
Well, the dark side, the devil, man. I don't know.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like this whole thing that we're talking about, really, the influence of the darkness. This is very real, you know. It's like this is not make believe. It's not just a bunch of hoo ha. We're talking about another prophecy. I'm going to talk about another prophecy that I was given quite a few years ago. I was told by spirit that the chaos was going to be rising, that we would see stunning, shocking behaviors of people happening, and we see that now. We're in that time of prophecy. So there are, like I'm saying, there are many levels of prophecies that are unfolding, that are in our lifetime right now. And, you know, this is pretty telling about where we are. And if people aren't aware or alert to what is really going on, you know, what's going to be happening to them?
Yeah.
I know.
You know, some people just use, like, foresight to, you know, look at a situation and be able to see how it's actually going to come out. and almost visionary, can literally, quite literally, tell you what's going to happen just by what's going on right now. So, you know, that's not something, you know, unique to just one individual. I believe everybody has that capability. But looking at all the events, taking everything, factoring everything in as it's happening and unfolding before our very eyes, you can't deny we're heading down a bad road. And for those ones that want to, you know, steer us away from that bad road and put us on a road to peace, you know, I think that's what's occurring right here. I think it's quite literally another prophecy unfolding. You know, my book said that blessed be the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. And I honestly believe that to be the truth. You know, and
if you look, Shaziz, at everything I've been through, I've been a child of war my whole life. They have come after me, okay? And I'm not saying that I'm holding that up, because I'm not, because I look at my body and every scar I have is a war wound. You know, I consider that a war medal, okay? But the situation is, look at what I'm trying to do now. And I've always kept that peace in my mind. I'm trying to do the right thing and just try to talk to everybody. Matter of fact, I got Wiltshire that said they're coming back to talk with us again later on this year.
Well, I think that's a wonderful thing. I think all of us have been down a hard road, but somewhere along that road we picked up some wisdom.
And yes, as an elder, you get what wisdom, and where I want to say is, you know, your children, they're your next generation. You need to take care of your children. Our women are life givers. We got to watch their back and keep them safe.
Yeah.
And our elders are the wisdom, and they're waiting to tell you everything they know. So the grandfathers and the grandmothers, they're the wisdom.
Well, where are the warriors? You know, and I don't mean the fighters, the violence. I'm talking about the real warriors. Like in our culture, the real warriors were doing just what you said. They're watching over the children, and they're watching over the old people. You know, and again, I want to emphasize that to be a warrior and to receive an eagle feather, which meant that you were counting coup,
mm-hmm.
made you a warrior. Counting coup is when you touch your enemy with a coup stick, it's called. It was a you know, like a staff of a shepherd's staff, looked like with the various, you know, animal skins perhaps of something that was a helper to you, could have been a bear, or part of a bear, or, you know, or a fox or whatever, but they were decorated to represent the helpers or the spiritual helpers of these warriors. But to count coup meant that you actually touched your enemy. You didn't murder or kill your enemy. You touched that enemy. Counting coup gave you an eagle feather, which meant you were a true warrior. So this is a warrior. Warriors helped the people. They hunted for the people. They helped the old people. They watched over the children. In our culture, this is what a real warrior was.
Right.
You know, they were respected. They were honorable men. You know, and there were women warriors as well, you know. But I'm saying, my question is, where are the warriors, you know? Because in today's world, I think men are very lost and confused about themselves as men. What is a man, you know? We know that the cabal or the agenda is to pit us against each other, men and women. This is also part of prophecy. That's a negative. But the other part of the prophecy is the return of the sacred feminine, sacred masculine, the coming together of these two aspects of ourselves, you know.
Women have to work together for the benefit of the whole creation.
That's exactly right. We're not going to get very far if we continue down the road that we have been deliberately put upon, you know, that seeks to pit us against each other, dislike each other, hate each other.
Right.
And so on. And this is a deliberate, and I have to just keep saying this, you know.
Yeah.
We are brothers and sisters, you know. Our brothers, as a woman, I'm going to speak this way. Our brothers, our fathers, our sons have been subjected to brainwashing in this culture, just as the women, my grandmother, my mothers, my sisters, everyone. Right. So we're all the same, suffering with the same imprints that tell us that, you know, that we're something different than we really truly are. That our brothers are, they don't even know who they are. They've been trained to aspire to certain things and have an attitude about what it is to be a man that is way off track.
Yep.
What I was told is being a man, you know, a long time by some men were, you know, if you cut your leg off by a chainsaw up to your kneecap, you don't cry about it. You just hop to the hospital and get it fixed, you know.
If you even do that.
Yeah.
It's like Grin and Bear It. You're
Grin
a man.
And hop to the hospital and get it fixed. You know what I mean?
And for heaven's sakes, don't be soft. Don't be soft or caring. Don't be compassionate.
Oh, God. You know.
You know.
What I was said, you know, the best emotion that a man had was anger. And I'm like, that's a
terrible thing, isn't it?
That's sick.
Because you're bringing up your children to follow suit, and the
exactly,
one that you...
That can't happen.
And the woman, you know, the woman beside you who, you know, is there with you, she's got other attitudes that were imprinted on her, too. Expectations. Everybody has expectations of each other that are false, exactly. You know. And you're going to fail in those expectations, by the way, and then you're going to get angry and you want a divorce.
Well, here's exactly what I'm going to say about Winstar as far as my wife is concerned. She has stood by me through the worst times that it could be, and she's still here. And to me, behind every good man, there's a better woman.
Well, you know, in our culture, they say that when the women stands, okay, the people are strong. When the women fall, when they're down on the mother, that's the end.
Well, you know, there's an old saying, and I think it's a Cheyenne proverb, that says that a nation is never defeated until the hearts of the women lay upon the ground.
That's exactly right. Those are the words.
Yep.
Well, I have to say that a lot of women's hearts are on the ground these days.
Did you guys see my message in Skype?
No. Wait a second, let me see. Where is it?
Want to take a music break, or do you want to take the microphone?
we could take the microphone. I don't see your message. I just see a sunshine going around.
Yeah, it's above that.
Oh, okay.
All right, it's all yours.
Okay. Okay, so that was a while back you said you needed to step out. Well, it's like 11, that was 11:17, it's now 11:26. Well, Two Dog and I, we can handle it. And you better lay off that coffee is all I gonna say.
Yeah.
Well, this. So yeah, Two Dog. You know, it's really. I think it's important for people to hear us talking about our people and, you know, the ways of our people. And it's not perfect. You know, now certainly there's been a lot of corruption in our own people's ways. I'm very well aware of that. And you know, it's sort of like. I always say when the Europeans came here to Turtle Island, they found paradise. You know, I think you can agree with me, right?
It was home to us, and they kind of considered it wilderness, but it was home to us.
Well, it was our home. Creator put us here, but also Creator set everybody up. The white race, white nation, I'm going to say, forget race, white nations. Black nations, yellow nations, and the red nations with the original instructions on how to live on this Mother Earth. And we were all put in different parts of the Earth for specific reasons. And I talk about the mending of the sacred hoop and what happened to the hoop, why it needs mending, you know. And the sacred hoop represents the wheel of life, or the medicine wheel of life, plus the sacred tree of life. You know, and the Wounded Knee, what occurred in 1890 at Wounded Knee here on Turtle Island was the last, I've got to say it was the final blow to the sacred hoop and the tree of life. because the sacred hoop represented the traditions of the white people, original white people, the original black people, the original yellow people, and of course, you know, the red. So, meaning every one of us, all nations, got the original instructions on how to live in harmony and balance on the whole earth, which was paradise. Okay? Not just here on Turtle Island, the whole earth originally was like that. And all the people, if your ancestry is black or yellow or white or red, everyone got the same instructions and everyone were tribal. You had the tribal, what I call tribal consciousness, meaning that you were in relationship to everything. Mitak v'yeo yasin, right? We needed each other. We all lived in that way, close to the Mother Earth. You could say, well, we were all Earth people. We all paid attention to the signs of the stars, and that's a given. We all know that. Ancient cultures show us. They all were very aware of the constellations, of the equinoxes, the solstices, when to plant, when not to plant, when to harvest, how to get along together, what we all needed to help each other. They all had their sacred fires, and they still do. The ancient cultures in Europe had their traditions, their ceremonies, their sacred fires, just like we did here on Turtle Island, you know. And this, what this was a prayer. So everyone was living in a prayer. Everyone was walking in that sacred manner, living the prayer. Awareness and consciousness and conscientiousness about this Mother Earth and all of life. So then it started to happen, the chipping away of these at these cultures, you know, like across the waters, the great waters. So you had the black culture assaulted, you had the white, definitely the European, those cultures all assaulted and shifted and changed, lost their original instructions, and the same with the yellow. The last remaining people that were holding up the sacred hoop with the prayers and the ceremonies and the relationship to the Mother Earth and Spirit was here on Turtle Island. So when the Europeans came here to Turtle Island, they found paradise. They found a clan mother system. They found people living in harmony and balance with nature and their connectedness and relationship to Spirit, Creator, and also the inner standing of everything that they did was for the next coming generation. So be careful what you do. And so when the Europeans came here, they started to chip away at this culture. They committed genocide. They brought slavery here, and they also enslaved the Indian people. Manifest destiny. So now what's happening to the sacred hoop? The sacred hoop is being slowly, slowly, slowly destroyed. And the last thing that happened to completely destroy the sacred hoop, the energy of prayer, conscientiousness, tribal consciousness throughout the world, was the massacre at Wounded Knee in 1890 of 300 and some people, mostly elders, children, women, and Chief Bigfoot. They were his people in January. They were trying to get to, I can't remember the chief. The chief it was. I should know that.
He's trying to get to Red Cloud.
Chief Red Cloud's people, because they were, they were starving. Bigfoot's people were starving. He was dying of pneumonia, and a branch of the Seventh Cavalry, I think it was, came upon them and corralled them and so on. And, you know, a situation happened, but they had Gatling guns. They took all the weapons, the rifles and tomahawks or bows and arrows, whatever the people had. So they had nothing, and they had Gatling guns and rifles and so on and cannons and upon the ridge surrounding these people who were literally starving. And they proceeded then to, as I said, there's a controversy about how it happened. Somebody says, well, there was a deaf Indian there who didn't want to give his rifle up and went off in a struggle, and that started the whole shooting thing. Well, they massacred over 300 and some men, women, children, old people, and the majority of them were running away. And so these soldiers were on horseback chasing them down, running after children and women and killing them. This ended, this destroyed the sacred hoop of life. And pretty much took out the tree of life, okay, is what it says. It's what Black Elk, the great Black Elk, said, the tree of life, and the sacred hoop is destroyed. And so, but he did say another prophecy is that there was a root of that sacred tree of life remaining. And the prophecy said that there would come a time when that would start to grow again. And here you have the you know, your flags coming from all people, the tree of the sacred tree planted, replanted, and the tree of life. And so here we are in this day and age, at this timeline, again, the prophecy coming. And the Rainbow Warriors is part of that prophecy.
I consider that we are the seventh generation to get this done.
That's correct.
And my daughter's generation is coming. And what I've done with her is that she's actually in line after me.
Oh, good.
The thing about this child is she has met no enemy ever. And that's how we raised her, is that all people, you know, you're to respect everyone. We are all brothers and sisters. And the thing that I would like to say for those who are, you know, who was at Wounded Knee in 1890, I still cry for you, and I still I still mourn them. But,
well, I went to
waiting for us.
You know, I went to Wounded Knee a couple of times, and the first time I went to Wounded Knee, I was invited to this gathering to mend the Sacred Hoop, actually, and part of that was at Sacred Sites, the one at Greengrass, and Wounded Knee, and Bear Butte, and Devil's Tower, you know, the great mountain there. And when I went to Wounded Knee, there was a young woman speaking there, and she told the story of one of her relatives. The reason she's alive was because one of her relatives, her people, was at Wounded Knee, and was actually a young boy, and was shot, but also fell into this pond, and, you know, half-frozen pond. It's in the middle of January and so on, and he fell into this little pond, and he stayed there, half unconscious and so on, and he said the beaver people saved him. The beavers of that pond, and he was found and brought back to health, and that was her ancestor, and that's why she's still alive on the land here, on the mother. And I'll tell you, you go there, and you know what happened, if the people don't know, if you want to really know the history of this event, you want to read Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. I read that book, and I was weeping through the whole thing. First of all, of course, I was shocked and surprised because we don't hear this. This isn't taught to us in school. This is a hidden history. And besides, they said, the government said that these were heroes, these soldiers, and they got medals for massacring helpless people, children, women, old people. So that's what we heard, that there was a war, and that the white soldiers won that war, and they got medals, but it was a massacre. So when you go there, you feel the ancestors. You feel the sorrow on that land.
You know, it's the same as what happened at Sand Creek with Black Kettle.
That's right.
You had a Methodist preacher turned general that said, in the name of God, these people have to be annihilated.
Well, he didn't say people.
Well,
he didn't call them people, right?
I call them people, but
I know.
But what he said was they have to be annihilated right down to the children, because nits make lights.
That's exactly right.
You know, that whole entire story, I'm watching it in my mental mind unfold, and it saddens my heart, and I don't know, honestly, if there's ever any hope of redemption for humanity for the atrocities that have gone on throughout this world and the history of this world. But deep in my mind and deep in my heart, I got this hope that somehow or another that humanity can find redemption and finally reach that ultimate stage of enlightenment where they actually get the message that I feel like the three of us have at least got, and know that
let's be realistic here too. There were people, there were white settlers, and even perhaps a few soldiers, and I'm going to give them that, that did reach out and help Native people, did help Indian people. There are stories, okay? And there are also stories on the other side, you know? But when you have a people living on a land for thousands and thousands of years, their homeland, you come into my backyard, you come onto my land, and you start massacring my family and my children, I'm going to fight back.
Oh, I agree. I understand.
All right, so this is what we have. So you could say people are saying, well, yeah, but the Indians killed the white people too, and yes, they did.
Well, I don't have a case.
But this, you come into my home, it's like, okay, you know, you come into my backyard and you start, you know, shooting your Gatling guns at my family who have nothing, in the middle of the winter, who run out of their teepees, you know, because they in naked and no food, no nothing, carrying their babies off into the wilderness, you're going to have retaliation.
Yeah, and I understand that. I understand that fully. It's just that I'm, in my heart, I'm wanting to move forward, not forgetting the past or belittle the past or anything like that. I don't.
The only thing I'm saying, Shaziz, completely, is that we remember our history. We remember it. It's not what the history book wrote, but it was the true story of our people.
Yes.
And the only thing we're saying is that we're not wanting history to repeat itself, and we can go on through, we can go further, but remember, and that is to say with all people, and that we are all related, and it's no matter how peaceful I am, but if you come in my house to harm my wife or my daughter, I'm going to blow you away.
Well, and I understand that, and I agree as well.
Well, you know, I want to say that this is continuing today, unfortunately, with our government going to other countries, going into other people's homes, other people's lands, the innocent people there that have nothing to do with what their government is doing, and slaughtering these people too.
Yeah.
Only thing I'm saying to our government is you need to clean up your backyard before you start trying to clean up somebody else.
Well, they're not trying to clean it up. They're trying to, you know, get the,
I know.
Whatever it is. But this is the problem. It's the same thing that happened here. It's like, ooh, free land, but wait, there's some non-human with two legs and a heart and hair and eyes and blah, 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 with a child standing next to them, but they're non-human, and they're in my way.
You know, you got to look at, and I'm going to say this because, you know, I'm going to put it out there. To be honest with you, Shaziz, every night I go to sleep, I have nightmare about my cousin, which I stood maybe 5 feet with when one shot him right in the head. So I have nightmares every night I gotta live with. But that's,
you know, I think we all have those stories, my friend, my nephew here, you know. My father was in World War II, you know. I think of what happened to him, and other men and women, and the atrocities that they participated in, and what they experienced too. But this doesn't have to be this way, is what I'm saying, because we are going to war for the kings and queens on the mountain, on the castles, and that's what continues today. You know, like with the clan mother system, for instance. If there was a prospect of war, or warring, or fighting with another group, okay, the clan mothers sat together and they determined whether this would be a good thing to do or not.
Right.
The clan mothers determined whether to go or war, or retaliate, or not, you see.
I still have to go sit in front of them.
That's right. And so if you don't follow the good chiefs in a good way, those clan mothers can say to you, well, sorry, Two Dog, but you're not helping the people at all. You're a little off track here. We're going to get rid of you now.
Yeah,
we're going to bring some.
They
can do that, right? But
and
the women in the Indian nations all had a say in every political or every determination for the people That's the Klan mother matrilineal system, you see. Whereas in our government, as you know, like I said, this was a patriarchy dominator system. That's what we're all under, and we remain that way. You may see women in the political positions, but really, they're overruled, and the percentage of them are minimal compared to the patriarchy. And so every system that we are under in this country, the political system, the religious system, the banking system, and the education system was all set in place by the patriarchy dominator rulers. Not one woman sat on any of those panels to determine what would be good for the children or the people or the families or the communities. Not one woman.
Well, and I think that's why I'm trying my hardest, and I believe you guys are doing the same, to reach out to the average people, the people, you know, not the leadership, the people that are getting sent to war and getting manipulated into doing to other people what they would not have done to their own. And
exactly.
So I'm... At the end of the show today, I'm going to play a song, and I don't know what the actual song itself, written for or actually meant for, but there's something that is said in the back of the song, and this song is one that was by Bette Midler. It's called The Rose. And if you listen to this song, the lyrics of it, it talks about a seed that's deep underneath the bitter snow, and that in the springtime would bring forth the rose. And it kind of matches what it is that I'm trying to get to today, about how society and the corruption and all the stuff that we are up against, we could quite literally be that seed that's underneath that bitter snow that one day could become
the rose. We are seed planters, and everything we do plants a seed. Either it's positive or it's negative, you know. I want to say, you know, on the way of carrying a Chinimpa Wakan sacred pipe, I pray with that pipe for all the people, because I'm a carrier of that pipe for the people. And I pray for everyone. I pray for all colors. I pray for our leaders of all the countries in the world. And I pray for those that I may disagree with and those that I see doing harm or doing awful things, making terrible decisions. I pray for them. I don't hate them. I pray for them because I pray that they are touched by Creator, Great Spirit, that their minds are cleared, that their hearts, you know, become good hearts for all people, and that their spirit is renewed in for the good of the whole, for the coming generations, especially for their connectedness and awareness to the earth. As original, we were all supposed to be stewards of this earth, you know. So I pray for the people that people hate. I pray for the leaders all over the world, because they've been taken, sold their souls to the devil. So I pray for their protection against evil. I find myself doing that more frequently. I've never ever said those words, but I'm saying them today. In these days, I am saying to Creator, Great Spirit, protect us from evil. Because this is what is present. This is what is happening. And I see it clearly. And again, it's like, I pray for the people. And, you know, I want to send out that energy, that high frequency. I want the change. The only way I feel a change is going to happen is through Creator, Great Spirit, to awaken these people. You know, I don't think throwing judgments or hate against others is not going to solve the problem. It's only going to exacerbate the problem.
I can also say it like this. There was somebody that asked Teshuka Wicco, you know him as Crazy Horse.
Right.
And they said that they wanted his people to be in civilization, you know.
Mm.
And Crazy Horse said, I want to live as my fathers and my grandfathers did. I don't want your civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember John Trudell actually said that civilization is the great lie.
Yeah. Well, they're not civilized.
There's nothing civil about it.
There's nothing civil or civil.
Jesus told all his disciples that all these things that I do, you can do as well if you believe. He also said that if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could move mountains. And so the reason why I bring that up is not to push my point of view or my belief system on anybody, is that, you know, it's going to take all of us to believe in the actual true power that we were told that we had. Right in the book, it said we had the power, you know, to quite literally do miracles.
Well, if you have an issue with Jesus or Yeshua, listen, we had the peacemaker here, came long before Yeshua. The peacemaker came to Turtle Island and spoke the same words. We have the white buffalo calf woman came here to Turtle Island, brought the same teachings. The Kankul Khan and Viracocha and the feathered serpent in the South Americas, and even in Asia and India, we have these holy, I call them the holy beings or the holy essence of Creator's voice. The messengers came throughout the whole world at different periods of time to bring the same exact message that you're talking about, Shaziz, the same exact message. Well, what is that?
And I think,
why does Creator keep sending? And I have to say, I feel strongly that White Buffalo Calf Woman was the last messenger that Creator sent. Prior to that was Yeshua, prior to that was the Peacemaker on Turtle Island, prior to that was the Viracocha, pre-Columbian times, and so on and so forth down the line throughout the world, giving the same message. I feel the White Buffalo Calf Woman was the last one to bring the same message of peace and healing and walking together and being in harmony and balance and prayer for the good of all, because I haven't heard of anyone coming after her.
I think because of the urgency of the state of our world, that we are quite literally here to remind people of these messengers.
I think Creator, wait, True Dog, I'll give you a second. I think Creator has given us a grace period.
Yeah.
And when seeing us all going on the wrong path, sent messengers with the same message. Simple message. It's a simple message.
Only thing I'm saying is, you know, about the messengers, is did you get the message? And Three Crow, I'll give it back to you.
Yeah.
Well, there it is. But I think that Creator kept seeing that we weren't getting the message. Now what's happened? White Buffalo Calf Woman was it's been thousands of years, hundreds and thousands of years, I think, they say, when she walked the earth, when she came, when Creator sent her and brought the Chinampa Wakan, the sacred pipe, and the seven ceremonies that most of them we still fulfill today. The same message, but then you have the separation, you have the intrusion of something very dark and evil that separated the people that brought organized stuff going on, and hatred and separation and violence and war and greed. And so we have all this unfolding here. What happened? Where are the messengers? Well, you and I, Two Dog and Shaziz and Patty Walking Turtle and, you know, and even Barry, who keeps trying to get on here and gets being knocked off. We're messengers. So don't kill the messenger. I don't claim to be on the level of White Buffalo Calf Woman or Yeshua or the Peacemaker. You know, I'm just somebody here that I, you know, receive guidance and have experiences that have occurred that are miracles, I call them, and my connectedness to Tabasha, the Great Spirit, and the carrier of the sacred Chinampa, the most powerful implement that the White Buffalo Calf Woman brought to people, part of the great mystery. I'm not on the level of those holy beings.
Well,
I'm just a woman here.
I don't believe that I am either. I believe that this particular circumstance is that we would be here as a reminder of the message that wasn't heeded. Barry says in the chat room that the human race is doomed, and that's one of my greatest fears, that the human race is doomed.
Okay, a doom and gloomer is amongst us.
I don't want us to be doomed, and that's why I'm saying, and you guys, I believe, are saying the same message that the messengers would have brought. Look, this is the road you're going down. You guys got to pay attention. You got to wake up. And I believe that if we paid attention to the message, if we got the message, like Two Dog said, did you get the message? If we got the message and we acted upon that message and did what we need to be doing as good caretakers of this world and each other, then we can turn this thing around. I don't believe that prophecy is written in stone.
Okay, listen here now. We're talking about the power that we have, my friends.
Yeah.
Creator gave us this power. That what you believe in, you will create. No doubt about it. What you focus on, you manifest. No doubt about it. Okay, so if you believe that humanity is doomed, okay, that's going to be your experience. If you believe everything is hopeless and you are helpless, that's going to be the experience that you manifest, okay? I'm not falling. I'm not going to go on that track. The roadway I am following is the one that tells me, you know, that there are miracles. I believe in miracles. I've had miracles in my whole life, okay? I believe in Creator. I believe in the power of Creator. I believe in the power that people do have. I believe in the awakening of people that it's happening. I'm not going to go into the negative because that is what I'm going to say. Lucifer, the dark ones, the cabal want you to believe that it's hopeless. Humanity is doomed. Now, I'm not going to be foolish and say, you know, and ignorant and say we're not in trouble because we are. But you know what? It hasn't ended yet. It's not ended yet.
Yeah,
okay? And that's ultimately up to Creator. So I'm getting in alignment with the positive and connected to the gifts and the power of that light, of that love, of that compassion, of the miracles. I'm not going to feed the dark who wants me to say, well, it's all over and forget about it, it's hopeless and it's the end of humanity. I'm not going to give that energy to that dark one. If I believe in Creator, if I believe in Yeshua, Great Spirit, White Buffalo Calf Woman, the Peacemaker, if I believe in the existence of these beings in a great spirit, in a holy one, Mother, Father, I'm not going to feed the dark.
Well, that's the point of the parable, the faith of a mustard seed. A mustard seed is a tiny little seed. If you had that much faith, is what Jesus said, that much faith was enough to move an entire mountain. You speak to the mountain and you tell it to move and that mountain would surely move. That's what he said. And I take his words literally. You know, regardless of whether you believe him to be the Son of God or just a messenger, it doesn't matter to me. But that little bit of faith right there is what is necessary to get the positive pebble, that seed that the song that I'm talking about, you know, put out there to start growing that hope in people's lives so that they don't believe that the human race is doomed. I don't.
No, I can't say that. I'm sorry, but I just have to respond here. I am just a woman here. I'm a grandmother. I'm an auntie. I'm a sister. Okay, I carry a sacred pipe at Chinampa, which I believe in the power of that, and I believe in the power of prayer. I don't have the power to say that we're doomed. That's up to Creator. Okay?
Yeah.
I don't have the power to say people in general, all people aren't waking up, okay, in the numbers that we need. I don't have that power. That's Creator's judgment. If Creator says, oh, I don't have enough people down there on earth who believe and who are coming to my side, that's the end. That's up to Creator. I don't have that power. How dare I say anything that is Creator's business and Creator's job to determine and to decide. Not me. I'm a human being here. I'm just a woman. And you are just a man.
That's right.
We are children of the Great Spirit. I do not take privilege to say, and I'm a little annoyed right now, because that energy of saying that we're doomed and the book will play out the way it was written by man, by the way, some of it's true, some of it is not true. There's a dark energy manipulating everything here. I'm not playing the game. And how dare I say something and take the words and put out these words. I am not Creator. I am not Great Spirit. It is ultimately up to the Creator that you believe in or not. Okay, but if you say you believe in it, if you believe in Jesus,
yeah,
I'm saying,
if you believe in the divine power and the glory of a divine Creator or a God, or however you want to say it, if you believe that God is powerful enough to create everything that is in existence and this world came, you know, out of a divine,
existence. I'm just not done.
Hold on. Let me throw this out.
Because you know what? You need to be humble.
Yeah.
I'm not done.
Okay.
I feel like I'm going to say it. I humble myself before Creator.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, because I know that it's ultimately everything is up to Creator.
Yep.
I'm not speaking like I know what Creator's going to do. How dare I?
Yeah.
You need to humble yourself before Great Spirit, before Creator, and before Jesus that I know you believe in, some believe in, and I believe in Yeshua, I believe in this Sacred One. But I'm just saying, don't let that dark energy put you on that track.
That's right.
Of hopelessness and giving up, and don't allow that to happen.
He said, because be not afraid.
You're not Creator. You don't have the last word. I'm sorry.
He said, be not afraid.
I'm like this. The way I look at it is, you know, why I'm on this earth and my heart is beating and I can breathe and feel the presence of everything around me. My time is not up yet.
There you go.
And I'm here to fight as long as I breathe.
That's what I believe. You
know, so here's the thing. If it is true that the only judge is God Himself, I'm not the one to judge anyone. And I can't say, you know, I can't say that, you know, the world is, the people are doomed. It's only one Creator that can actually say that. And I have to constantly remind myself to be humble in every step of prayer that I do. Because every step I take is a constant prayer and a constant talk with my Creator. So we have to stay humble.
So let's look at this. So the remark is that He tells us what's going to happen. He tells us what's going to come. Okay. That is very real. But okay, but what are you gonna like go with the negative? He also tells us the other positive. So what are you choosing?
Says it in a prayer, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. And Jesus said, don't fear, these things might come to pass or whatever. He also said though that unless these days are numbered, unless something changes, this is what's going to happen. And anybody, even in the common sense realm, can say that if you're on a path like we are today, only bad things can occur. But like Two Dog said, it ain't over until we're dead.
That's right.
And exactly. Until we're dead, I'm holding out hope. I'm holding out the faith. I'm planting the seeds of love.
Oh, yeah. You know what? And guess what? When you get to the point after you leave the physical realm and... let's say Great Spirit meets you there, or an angel says, okay, how'd you do there? We gave you a job to do, how'd you do? Well, I didn't believe you. I believed in the negative instead. Oh, I didn't believe the good word that you gave us. I believed in the prophecies that you gave us that said this is going to happen if you don't follow the way of the light.
Well,
I made a mistake.
There's a story in the book about a man who was drowning in the ocean, and Jesus reached out to raise him up, and as long as he kept his eyes on him, he was fine. But once he turned away, he started sinking in the water again. Now, if you take a look at that, the further you get away from the light, you get into the darkness. And that's as simple as I can
say. That's exactly right. Tell the story of walking on the beach. The guy who says to the Creator, Great Spirit or Creator, what happened to you? You said you would walk beside me. Tell that story.
He basically said in the poem Footprints is that the guy was going through some really hard times, and he said, during these hard times, I only noticed one set of footprints in the sand. You know, why did you leave me? And he said, my son, those were the times where I was carrying you.
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you, I've been in some really dark places. I have been in some really dark places. I've been in that place where you say, well, it's all hopeless and I'm helpless and the dark is coming and I'm being swallowed up. And you know what? A light came. And you know, I know the speaker out there, the one who's writing in this chat, I know you've been in that place, and I told you, don't let that dark grab you, because that's exactly what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
I know the belief is strong in you. That's that dark energy trying to grab you and turn you away from what you believe in your heart. You know, and I see it happening over and over again to people, and that's part of the agenda, that's part of this happening, you know.
I believe that God had the power to create the heavens and the earth, and he has the power to do whatever to the will that he wants. And so, you know, maybe it's all out of our hands, but maybe it ain't all out of our hands. Maybe we've been given a choice to whether to rob, rape, loot, and pillage and destroy the land that was gifted to us as caretakers, or we can do what is right and make things right. And I honestly believe that if we took those words literally from the messengers from all different nations, all different cultures, and we exercise those words, that we could quite literally bring about a heaven on earth. And I think that would be the best glorification of any God or creator that you can imagine, is to see his creation finally get it, to finally understand what their purpose was.
If you think about it, didn't God feed the birds of the fields?
Yeah, he's fed everybody. Look, we got more water than we can ever drink on this planet. We got more land than we could ever live on. We got more resources, and yet there are people starving in this world, and it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, why?
You know, listen, there's a thing called seed planting, right? We talked about that.
Yeah.
Okay, we are seed planters, every one of us. It is not up to me, basically, to push people, prod people, pull people, drag people, okay, to where I think they should be. That's up to their life, their journey, what they agreed to do, and up to their relationship with Creator. I can't drag people. I can just plant a seed.
When you
plant a seed in the garden, you water it, you look at it, you watch it grow, you pray over it, you say, you know, you don't say, come on, you gotta grow and become what I want you to become. It's not up to me, that's up to Creator, and that soul's journey is in relationship to Creator. It's not up to me to drag people to Creator. It's just not. That's not my job. My job is a seed planter.
Yeah.
My job is to shine that light and speak in a good way and be a messenger. And the people, what they determine to do in their journey here on life is up to them and their Creator.
I like to give the example of the lighthouse, because that lighthouse is indiscriminatory. Everybody from every race, religion, creed, color can see that lighthouse and know that there could potentially be a danger ahead, and so they can guide themselves back to home. That's what my job is, to be a lighthouse to as stormy as this world might get. I'm not going to be afraid. I'm going to do what I can, and if my time comes, I think I could honestly stand before my Creator and give a good count of what, you know, I at least attempted to do with my words and my actions.
I agree with both of you, and what I tell people all the time is that if I say something that helps you, okay, don't thank me. Thank the Creator. I just gave a message.
Yep, I understand that as well.
Well, we all say that we are in a spiritual battle, you know, and this spiritual battle is an individual experience. It's a collective experience, but it's also individual. And if we are in a spiritual battle, you know, it is said that some will fall. Okay, that's perhaps what they agreed to with Creator. I don't know. I can't say for sure, but I'm saying that we cannot save everybody. It's our journey, our spiritual journey, and the battle collectively that we are in. You know, I can't drag you, Shaziz, to where I think you should be. I just can't. I can't prod you, pull you, scream at you, tear my hair out. If you have your journey set before you, it's in your relationship to your Creator.
Yep, and that's what I feel. I just do the best I can, you know, and, you know, hopefully if there's anything in my life that people see worthy of adopting into their life and it brings them goodness and stuff, then I think I've done the best job that I can. You know, that's...
I guess what I'm saying, if I were to think, okay, that it's up to me to turn everybody toward Creator and toward the light, I think I'm expecting that I have a certain power or a certain, you know, that I'm almost like I'm Creator or I'm God, you know. I'm not on that level. I'm just a human being here, trying to trying to speak of the good things and help people, and like Two Dog says, and I agree, if there's something that I say that touches you, yeah, I'm just a messenger.
I think we're all
I'm nobody important.
We're just...
I'm just saying that there's something greater going on here.
Yeah.
There's something bigger and greater, and this is Creator's way.
We're just pieces of the puzzle, you know, that make the big picture, and that's all we're saying here. We're just pieces of the puzzle that makes the ultimate picture of all of humanity.
And
if all three of us that are talking right now, and Patty and Barry, and anybody that is on this show, if anything we say resonates with you, get in the canoe and let's ride.
Yeah, let's go towards...
Let's go to the shore.
Whatever.
Let's go together.
Look, folks, we're down to it again. And this time where we go around the table, and this has been a really awesome conversation as usual. It just kind of takes on a life of its own. And so, you know, I just wanted to point out to people about the corruption of this world, which is blatantly obvious. Everybody sees it. You know, corruption comes in so many different forms, so many different directions. It's just ridiculous what we have to contend with. But at the same sense, you can't feed the beast, otherwise the beast will continue to eat you alive. And if we as humanity want to ever, you know, not be doomed, we got to at least make the attempt. You know, under my belief system, I wasn't never told to lay down the evil. I was never told to stand idly by and just allow, you know, terrible things to happen. You know, I was told that I had power. I was told that if I had the faith of a mustard seed, I could move mountains. And I'm out doing just that. I'm attempting to move mountains. I'm attempting to get people to at least seek out some sort of spirituality. Seek out something good in this world and plant seeds and do things, because otherwise, what's the point? What's the point of this existence if all we are to do is to get beat up and lay down the evil? I refuse to it, you know? You can, like Two Dog says all the time, you can kill my body, but you're not going to kill this spirit. And my spirit's made of love. And I believe that love came from a divine creator. And so with that said, while I'm here on this earth, while I have breath in my body and I have an option and solutions available to me, I'm going to share these messages of hope and peace and love with the world, because that's the kind of world I want to leave behind. That's the kind of world I'd love to live in. We're not there yet. But I would love to see your children and my children live together in harmony, looking past all the so-called labels that they put everybody under, looking past the differences and understanding their true purpose in life. I think I understand my true purpose is to be a good caretaker, is to be a good servant. I am humbled and honored, and I am glad and proud to be a servant to the community. I'm a servant to my brothers and sisters, no better, no worse. All of us on equal footing, doing the right thing at the right time, is what I believe we were meant to be. And so with that said, ladies first, Barbara, you got some words of wisdom to send us out of here?
Thank you. It's always a good show when we come up and revving up here a little bit. good words from everyone here. And, you know, I just feel that be aware and be alert of when you are being overtaken by doubt, by fear, by hopelessness, and sense of being helpless. That's an energy that is not of the light. Okay? And we have our own power given to us to choose whether to fall into that negativity, because that's what they are, that's trying to grab you, to feel like it's all hopeless. Well, nothing's going to work here, and we're all doomed, and it's doom and gloom. Well, that's the choice you are making, to align with that frequency, that energy. It is not Creator's voice. It is not Yeshua's teachings. Yes, we were given both sides. That was a beautiful thing. Guess what? I'd rather know what I'm up against and what is trying to manipulate me so that I can be stronger in my faith for the light and what I know is good. You know, and ultimately it's all up to Creator, but I'm going to stay on that track as best as I can. So if you were getting these thoughts that, yeah, we're all doomed and it's all hopeless and it's helpless and blah, 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 well, that's the dark talking to you. That's what its job is. So it's up to you to choose. You know, how strong is your faith in the light and goodness and healing and eternal experience, you know, the joy of things and the beauty of things. That's up to you. Again, it's a crossroads. There you are, one pathway or the other pathway. We are always going to meet it, you know, but nothing's going to change unless you choose. It's up to you. Free will Creator gave us. So you can either choose the positives, the love, the joy, the gratitude is a good one, or you can choose to be doom and gloomer and believe in the negativity and believe it's all hopeless and you're helpless and you can't do a darn thing anyway. Well, that's all I have to say.
And you all, and words of wisdom as always, and you always got to factor in that when you tell the world that we're doomed, there's a lot of people that are going to believe it and they're going to spend the rest of their life fearful.
That's a power, and I have to say that you are taking on a power, a monumental power that is not ours as a humble human being of gratitude and humbleness to put that word out.
Well, by definition, the word savior means sometimes coming to save you, you know, and right now I honestly believe that the people who have the chance to try to save the world is we the people of the world, even though it's in such terrible disarray according to what we're told. But, you know, to just lay down and say, well, nothing I can do about it, you know, we're all doomed, you know. Hey,
I just want to remind people that, again, you know, we're not going to be here forever in this physical experience. We're all heading on that pathway to leave this physical body.
Yep.
And if you believe that you are a light, a spirit, a soul within this physical body that has been manifested and created in a beautiful way by your Creator, well, if you are aligning with the dark, saying it's all doom and gloom and forget about it, when you get there on that other side, like I said before, you're going to be asked how you did here on this earth. What were you aligned with? What were your good words? Did you help the people? Did you spread violence, hatred? Were you negligent? Or did you, no matter what was happening, spread the love and compassion and goodness and faith in this great spirit and this great, you know, this great being, this mother, father?
That's the way I look at it. My God didn't make any trash, only treasure. Proof of that is my best friend over there, Two Dog. it's his turn to talk some words of wisdom, and hopefully he can even get his prayers out, you know, because all the prayers in this world are needed, especially in these dark days that we find ourselves in.
Let me do it this way, my brother, and let's see if they do it again. Get your money to God, Jesus, all the names that they call you. I send a voice to you in the wind. Hear me. I thank you this day that you have allowed me to open my eyes. I thank you for the breath you have gave me in this morning and the days that I do breathe. I thank you for the rocks and the tree peoples and everything that is on this planet that is our relation. I say this to you now, that what you wish for me to do, I will humbly do. And I will ask no questions. And that I will stake myself to my mother and do for you. For the peace that you are speaking of that flows through me, let it resonate. Let it resonate to all and to all these worlds. Let the messengers that you have gave all people, let the message be heard. And may we all walk in this world with peace and understanding. And may it all come back. And for all that, I wish to say, Ski, thank you, Kichimanitu, for being here for all of us. Uh-huh. May we be here for you. I hope.
Amen, my brother. He got his message out. Woohoo! Oh, man. I tell you what, folks. I love these people. And I love you, too. That's my job. That's what I love to do. I love to love. If you heard anything in this show and it resonated in your heart, you share that message with somebody. If the 6 degrees of separation is true, you can get that message across the world so rapidly it'll make the whole world's head spin, and that might be a good thing. People need to wake up, and they need to have hope, and they need to have prayers, and they need to have some sort of light at the end of the tunnel. They need to know that there's something better in this world than what they're seeing with their eyes. We need to be able to stop the wars and the rumors of wars and the plagues and the famine and pestilence before all the prophecies come true, and we're just living in the worst nightmare possible. You don't have to be, you know, religious to understand that the path that we're on, we're seeing some terrible things going on. You know, and I don't want to see anybody starving in this world, and I believe that there's we have the capability of fixing it. I don't want to see wars and people being bombed and drone strikes, whatever. I don't want to see people suffer in this world. And that don't make me any better than you. It just means that I get it. I understand. I get what my purpose here is in this world. And I want to be a good caretaker. I want to be a good servant to my brothers and sisters. That's why I do what it is that I do here. And if that message is your message, then share that message with somebody else. Share these podcasts. Bring them over here. Have them join us on the Knights of the Round Table. There's plenty of room around this round table. When Two Dog gets his flags together and he gets his tree of peace, and you see that many people standing around representing that many nations, that's a symbol of hope. It's a symbol of the vision, the dream that could come about if we could all just understand. It's that simple.
Well, I'm going to add here one more thing. I know we're going over, but if you, so we're here, I guess, to help each other, you know, yeah. I think. We're here as brothers and sisters of all nations. We're here to be in service to create a great spirit. Now, if you want to help people, you want to show them gratitude and hope and the beauty of things and the miracles that are really happening. Because there are miracles still happening. And of course you don't see them on mainstream media. Don't go there. But if you're going to take the other route, if you're going to feel, you know, doom and gloom and it's all hopeless and we're doomed and this is the end and forget about it, well, that's how you're leading the people. Like you said before, Shaziz, this is really important. You made me think about this a little more. So what comes out of our mouth has a power.
Yeah.
What we believe in has a power. Are we going to lend a hand to someone and bring them along, you know, the pathway? And again, it's still up to them. But I'm not going to get angry at people who may not get there yet. Everybody comes to what is necessary for them in their own time, according to their agreement with Creator. That's not for me to say. I can't judge people like that, and I'm not going to feel hopeless or helpless, okay? My job is to carry the light, to hold the light, to speak in a way that may help someone, you know? And that people are awakening, and there are some that aren't awake yet. Some may never awake, but I still believe in the light and Creator and the love that Creator has for all of us. So that's all. I just wanted to add that. Pilamaya.
Wonderful, wonderful words again from both of you, straight from the heart, straight from your spiritual journeys in life, and it's a humbling and an honorable experience to have you share that with me here on the Knights of the Round Table. That's what this whole deal is all about. Folks, everybody sitting on this panel right now has been down the dark road. We've seen it. We've been down the rabbit hole so deep that we've seen terrible things. And we know that we've also seen the good side of the road, because for some reason or another, a message has been laid upon our heart that we're trying to put out there to the world, that there is a possibility we can fix this if we really choose to do so. But to put all your power, all your strength, and all your words, and everything that is you into the belief that we're all doomed, it takes away from everything that the words were said to me about, you know, what we were told as far as something as small as a mustard seed. The faith, that small, had so much power to move a mountain. So with that said, I'm going to play a song on the way out of here, because something in this song resonates with me, and it's pretty much close to the last portion of the song where it talks about deep below the bitter snow, that seed in the springtime becomes a rose. That's what we're trying to do.
Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves your soul to bleed. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need. I say love, it is a flower, and you, it's all.
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
realize... Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet!
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet! I order you to be quiet!
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more, we're table. So many times we give and rhyme that our quiet unsing able. We're off so mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Surveys the Turbo! Always looking! Surveys the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!